The raft says, okay. All right.
Comic timing
is a proud member
of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch.
Print it. Welcome to episode 85 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as some guy named Brent Cassina, a rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levesine, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. We are absolutely live from MegaCon, doing a review corner live the day before MegaCon, but technically we're not really at MegaCon yet. Listen to the episode anyway. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levesine, and welcome to episode 85 of Comic Timing. Brent just did something. What'd you do, Brent?
I'm responding to Brandon laughing at you. I want to know, when you do the intro, do you do the head nod thing all the time, or is this just for us?
This was just for you.
Okay.
I figured I needed some sort of motion to make...
keep us awake.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because you've heard the exact same lines out of my mouth.
Okay, good.
Yeah. For at least 85 episodes.
Yeah, so, yeah, good.
And 85, man, 85.
85, happy 85.
Yeah.
85, we're live in 85. Hey, Brandon is also here. Brandon, do I sound man prettier in person or what?
Brandon, your thoughts, Brandon?
I hate you so much right now. It's not even funny.
Oh, but we love you.
Can you turn the volume up? Poof.
Oh, damn it, we lost Raph. Yeah, Raph Suhu not on this episode because he didn't go to Orlando. But hey, come on, it's a live review corner. First time this has ever happened.
And it's
for
my
us.
First review corner also.
Yes,
yeah.
Your first review corner, because we pretty much decided it would be kind of weird for you to be the audience just sitting all over there while we record an episode.
Glad, yeah,
because basically you'd just be like doing woo, yeah, all right, yeah, boo.
What is the entire time?
Oh,
is this a G4 recording?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. X-Way, yeah. Right.
And Brent's great because he's got an extra job today. He's got to do the back and forth things so that you can both talk.
But I can hold.
Oh!
I have hands. Oh, my God.
Hey, big spender.
Oh, my God. What's with that today?
All right. And remember to talk into the mic when you're talking.
Yes.
Just so
you're...
All right. So we're doing Review Corner here. We're going to start off with the indie, then we're going to go Marvel, and then we're going to go DC because we saved the worst for last. So anyway, so let's start things off with Bang Tango number one. Technically a DC, but it's a Vertigo, so I guess it counts as the indie.
It's an imprint, right?
It's an imprint, right, exactly. Written by Joe Kelly, art by Adrian Seabar, Ronnie Ramos on inks. Who was that, MegaCon? Yes.
You should probably use the mic for this.
Probably a good idea, yeah.
Joe Kelly, Adrian Seabar on art, Rodney Ramos on inks, who's at MegaCon, so we should probably talk to him and be like, hey, we just released an episode about your book last night.
Yes.
So we have to sound professional in case he's listening.
It's very true. Well, I'm going to professionally say that I enjoyed this book.
I enjoyed it as well.
And we're not just saying that because we might have an interview.
And we're trying to be professional so you don't have to edit it.
Yes.
You can just put it out tonight.
Yes.
The other reason. So, no. We're not Raging Bullets.
Yeah, we're not Raging Bullets. We don't need the full credits. Yeah, for those of you who didn't hear Brandon because he didn't talk into the mic,
he just asked if
we're doing that. Yeah, pretty get closer to each other so you can both use the mic at the same time. I know that you're afraid of the man pretty thing.
Kind of an issue here.
Yeah, right. But what are you going to do?
Not the manhole.
Okay.
Oh!
Glad
you're on the pull out.
Manhole.
No, I said manhole.
Man alive, ladies and gentlemen. Man alive. Okay. Now,
this book is great.
Yeah. Well, first off, the cover totally different than the insides because that's a Howard Chaykin cover.
Yes.
Detracts from your enjoyment of the book, or it's just a cover?
I would say it's just a cover because it's an indie.
Mm-hmm.
And covers sell indies, right? Covers
right,
sell
I guess.
Books.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, what do you think of the Chaykin cover?
I like the Chaykin cover. I think it's a really It kind of reminds me of like a cover for like a spy movie.
That's better. Yeah.
You got the guy with the gun holding the girl in his arms.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets the point across.
Far from the only thing he does to his girl during in this comic too.
Yes, he holds her quite a bit. Like, you know what he's doing? Holds something completely different.
Right.
I mean, as it for being shaken is different from the art. I mean, we've seen tons of books where the cover artist is completely different from the interior. So it's just another cover for me.
Yeah. And
does he have different colored eyes inside too? Or is
I think,
it just the cover?
I think he might, actually.
Because I didn't notice that till just now.
Let's see. He does. He does. Right here on page two.
Okay.
On page two. And on page three, you can tell that one eye is brown and one is
Oh, gotcha.
Blue, I
totally
believe.
Missed that.
Yeah.
The first two times reading it.
Well, it's a good time that you looked at it a third time.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, and is it just me? Brandon and I were talking about this earlier. Howard Chaykin and John Romita Jr. are becoming the same person.
And Frank Miller.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're all starting to draw like the same faces.
You know, when you get to the industry for long enough, you get your style and you see a lot of styles start to merge together. I think that's really what happens with Chaykin, Miller, and JR, except for JR doesn't draw round faces anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
What are you smoking? I would say yes on the Frank Miller reference, but JR, I don't see it.
Yeah, you don't see it?
No. Considering she has pointy elbows and not square.
And her face is a little more circular. That's true.
And she's not a mummy either.
Yeah. And she's not a mummy either.
Yes, that's very true. All right. Well, let's talk about the issue itself. The C-Bar art. Thoughts?
I liked it.
So did I. It was very pulpy.
Trying to think of where I've seen his art before. Anybody?
Didn't he do Checkmate for a little bit?
Possibly. Probably after...
Saiz
left. Okay. Probably issue was 24, I think it was.
I think
around there,
maybe.
And probably fill until till the end. I think.
It's a possibility. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen his art before. I'm thinking whether it was Manhunter or whether it was Checkmate or something like that. But one of the smaller books at DC that not that many people read. I remember that. The art definitely works here.
I liked it. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's on the level of... Why are you getting a beer?
he's getting a bottle of water. Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, you didn't even offer me one. Anyway, moving on. No, I would say that it's pretty good art. Not the best draftsman. I mean, it's there that maybe, like, unsymmetrical a little bit.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that because it kind of gives it this dancey, energetic vibe.
Well, it fits in with the type of art you usually get from a Vertigo book, you know?
Yeah.
Because I mean, not all Vertigo artists are clean lines and everything's clean cut. You know, they got a little bit of an edgy flair to them.
I was about to say, it does look like a lot like, especially the coloring, like a lot of other Vertigo books. I think with the line work and the coloring working together, it makes it pop a little bit more. It kind of reminds me of, for those who have read it, Vinyl Underground. I can see a little bit of the Vinyl Underground style.
Are you just really wanted to bring up Vinyl Underground,
no,
didn't
no,
you?
No, not at all. I'm saying it does remind me of that a lot.
Yeah, be very happy you didn't know what was just going on in this room, people. All right. This is an inside joke that's going to
say. I gotta say, though, that, I mean, this is the first indie that we've ever gotten that has the crappiest paper ever. I mean, it's just like the Fables trade and the Y trade paper, but... I opened this up and didn't expect it to be on this, like, thicker newsprint type stuff.
I like the thicker paper. It's gives it more of, like, a good feel of the book, I believe.
Well, okay.
It doesn't have the glossy sheen. Compared to the other books, me and Ian, I was going to call you Indy.
Hi.
Hi, Indy. Compared to the other Indy books...
Give me back my hat.
We need the dog Indy.
remember we did the Doctor Who one, and that was on, like, thick, glossy paper.
Yeah. Which we commented on at the time.
Right,
yeah.
Because I was surprised.
Yeah.
Hellboy. What was the... Not the manga one. I'm trying to help me out with the other, next one.
What other ones did we do? Fuck, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I mean, we've done in the Chapel of
Umbrella
Moloch.
Umbrella Academy,
thank you. Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah. Which was another Dark Horse book.
Yeah.
So that'll do that. This is sort of what's been going on with Vertigo books, though. In order to keep them $2.99, they've been skipping on the paper a little bit.
But do you think the paper makes the book, or is it still the story?
It's still the good book, but I mean,
yeah.
Compared to the other indie books that we've had, this is, I would say the paper is on a lesser quality to me, just because it's compared to other stuff we've done. I mean, if you're looking at the Punisher there, or the Final Crisis one that we're going on, the paper's a bit different. But is this the regular paper for Vertigo books? Because I'm just getting Vertigo and
trades. It pretty much is, yeah. Other than, I'm trying to remember, did White Last Man have this sort of paper also?
Because
you're picking it up in trades. Well, what is the paper in the trades like in White Last Bang?
It's cardstock. Okay. Cardstock paper also. All right. I like cardstock a lot because it reminds me of books when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I started picking up issues, it was, you know, newspaper print books.
Well, this is more like the type of paper that they print Tiny Titans on.
Yeah, it's not when Brent says low quality paper. I don't think he means like low quality paper. It actually is a good thick stock paper though.
Yeah,
it's just. Non-glossy, that's all.
Yeah, well, I think they mentioned this on 11 o'clock comics, too, that, like, they were
talking about pounds of paper, and they didn't bother to go in to explain it.
Yeah.
The higher the pound the paper is, the thicker the paper is.
Right.
If I had to guess, this is probably around maybe 30, 40 pounds
something
of
like
paper.
Something like that. Yeah.
Are you a publishing expert?
No, but I do a lot of writing now.
And he plays one on TV.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it's
like,
for,
like
for
my doctor, like Neil Patrick Harris.
NPH, baby, NPH. But yeah, well, what's interesting about this, though, and one of the comments that I want to make about Vertigo Trades, and actually DC in general, is a lot of people have been pissed off about the paper quality of trades lately, that they've been around the same quality as the books, like not actually improving the quality of the trade itself. So I think we're starting to get that out of both Vertigo books and Vertigo trades, that the paper quality doesn't actually improve in the better version, which would be a little weird, like the collected version, which you expect to be a little better quality.
Well, I could understand like the Fables and stuff being this same paper that we got here, because you're only paying $12.
True.
For a trade,
I think like, 14 now because everything's going up.
The last Fables trade that I got, 11 was like, it was like 8 issues, and the one before that was like 8 or 9 issues,
mm-hmm.
just to keep it cheap, and it was still like $15 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I understand that. I mean, when I'm buying a trade, I don't mind this paper. I don't mind it in Fables, but. I spoke about the paper just because it was different from the other stuff that we've read so far.
Definitely,
the
yeah. Well, hey, and it did keep the price at $2.99, which is a plus. Yeah. Now, Joe Kelly is the writer here. Obviously, most people know him from Deadpool and the work he's done on Spider-Man and stuff like that. According to you, he did a couple of other things, right?
I think he also wrote on Robin for a little bit. You know?
Maybe for a little bit. We're not quite certain on that, but possibly before Willingham,
yeah.
Like right around then.
Right before Infinite Crisis stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, Joe Kelly, I mean, he is a very versatile writer. I mean, he's gotten a lot of different types of books over the years. This is one of the first ones I've read of him where he actually curses. So that's a major change for me.
Cursor, at least, where it's not edited out there.
yeah, I know. Well, I'm sure Deadpool had many of the, like, you know, scribbles and stuff like that in them. But, yeah, I mean, this is a very different style for Joe Kelly, and I like it.
It's noirish. I do like it a lot. It's, it really is like a noir. It's,
I believe the word is noir.
Noir.
Noir?
Noir.
Oh, it is noir?
Noir.
Okay.
Noir?
Noir?
Noir.
Noir. Nowhere?
It's noir.
Okay, all right.
It really is like a noir. I mean, you have the whole anti-hero who's, you know, apparently he's got a shady past. And actually, I like it because it's kind of a dark... It's a Vertigo book, and it's got a little bit of a darker feel to it. Mm-hmm. And I am glad we actually see a writer like Joe Kelly who really do like a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff.
Yeah.
Can just go to town on this.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've at the beginning of the book here, there's a dance scene, and I was... reading it before the first two times and didn't really feel much for the they have like the song lyrics printed mm-hmm. on the page and the panels and kind of overlapping the panels, and I didn't really think much of it before, and I was just like, why am I bothering to read these song lyrics? But then I realized it's instead of you just moving from panel to panel really quickly because there's no text on it, the song lyrics are actually making you read the panels
right.
longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I just realized this now, and that's pretty cool. I really like that.
Well, that, and I'm noticing here, I mean, again, I've only read this once through all the way because I actually just read it on the way here today. But that's the same girl from later on in the book, isn't it? Right,
yeah, I mean, and at the bottom, they're peppering in her risque photos mm-hmm. and stuff throughout the book that you find out later.
Yeah, and the main character of the book, his name is Vin.
Vincenti,
blah, 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 however the hell you pronounce his last name.
I'm guessing he's Italian.
Or at least half.
Vinny, they call him Vinny.
Yeah, because they make that comment later on in the book that he's half and half.
Yeah.
He's a mutt, as they would say. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, you honestly would not expect someone's career choices to switch from Hitman to Tango
Star.
Well,
Hitman, mobster.
Something like
he's
that.
He's involved in bad business.
Definitely, yeah. I mean... concept for you. Did you ever think you'd be reading a book about a con man or whatever, a guy involved with the mob switching over to Tango?
Honestly, no. it's like a John Cusack movie. You know, you see this guy who's, mm-hmm. who used to do something else. Now he's completely down on his luck as a Tango dancer or mm-hmm. trying to work his way through the top again. It's the juxtaposition. You know, you have. This person who really did this dirty work before, and you know, whenever a person tries to reform, they do something completely different. So now he's going to become a dancer.
Right, right, yeah, and I mean, he's on the complete opposite side. He's obviously on the West Coast now,
yeah.
trying to avoid his past life, and it looks like he's got a completely new life here. I mean, he's got friends that are almost like family to him. He's got fuck buddies all over the place.
Yeah, everywhere. It's that's what I like about Vertigo books. They really do put an emphasis on the supporting cast.
Yeah, yeah.
They really do round out all the supporting characters.
And he also supports his cast, literally, because, you know, when he's pushing them up against the wall, he needs to support them,
yes,
or else they're going to fall.
They're going to fall on the floor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That would be very difficult.
Or when she's on the top of all the kegs and stuff. You know, there's only one bar for support there.
Yeah.
Or on the roof in the rain.
Or on the bed with the broken lamp and mirror. We're not kidding, folks. They don't call this bang tango for nothing.
Because there's a lot of banging going on, man. A lot of banging.
We're not talking about gunshots.
Most certainly not. Well, and what's great about this, too, I mean, certainly some way to negotiate how much you're going to be
rehearsing,
practicing the next day.
That's,
you know,
great. 5 hours of rehearsal. Oh, God. 3 hours. Fuck you. Okay. Four and a half. You son of a bitch. It's like, I guess I can't hold you for five.
I expected someone eventually to go, damn it, McBain.
Cloud?
Chief?
Oh, God. But, yeah, you know, they say sex is like the ultimate Calistoga, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And actually, one of the things, I mean, we talked about the art, but how about the coloring and the inking going on here? Because I think that adds to the book as much as anything else. I mean, it helps create that, I think, a very realistic style for, especially like the scenes taking place in the Castro here. You get a real feel for the neighborhood and, I guess, the world itself. I mean, you get drawn into the world really well via the art and the writing combined.
I like the coloring. I mean, I don't know anything about inking, but nothing really here detracts from it, so I have to say good job, Rodney.
Yeah, definitely.
And if we talk to you tomorrow, I'm sorry I don't know anything about inking.
I'm sorry, Mark Wade.
It's for another time.
That's tomorrow.
Sorry.
Yeah, but usually if you look at someone like Klaus Janson, who does a lot of does a lot of inking also, depending on the mood of the book, he'll ink it something a little bit heavier. You know, this right here is very light inking, just accentuating the lines and certain shadows, especially along the faces. None of the faces look too heavy, so they look like actual people. Like if this were a movie, it looks almost like real life for the most part. It brings a certain visual element to the book.
Right.
I don't know. I'd say on this page right here, where they're laying in bed, I would have to disagree with you on the light inking part. I mean, some of the lines look a little heavier, but I mean, I don't know what. It looks nice.
Well,
that's all I,
okay,
can't,
but you
really
know what?
Complain.
From scene to scene, there's definitely a change. Like when they're in the dark, I think he goes for a little bit more of a lighter tone because he got the coloring going in there, which is obviously if you go too dark on the inks there, it's going to muck up the panel.
Also, you also think about where they are. Are they in a well lit area, or are they in an area which is, you know, lit by like light or shadows or whatever? I mean, if you look like an interior should look different from an exterior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at an exterior, you should see less markings. You should see less inking.
Yeah,
because there's direct sunlight. If you look at the interior, there should be shading around the bodies. You know, where the curves fall, where certain musculature is around the body.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a difference, and I think there is a complete difference. You look from page to page here. This is page, I think, 6 to 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just call it the sex page number one.
If you look at sex page number one,
number two. All right.
To where he goes outside, it's not only the coloring helps, but it is inked a little bit differently if you look at it, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's certainly apparent. And plus, I think what's great about this, and let's talk about the story a little bit.
I just want to ask.
Sure.
We've never talked about inking on the show before. We're just talking about this because I mentioned he's going to be at the show tomorrow.
Well, no. Honestly, but seriously, to tell you the truth, one of the first things I noticed about this book was the coloring and the inking. Because I mean, I've seen, you know what? It would be pedestrian art if not for the coloring.
I would say that like the Doctor Who one, or not the one shot, the Doctor Who Pia Guerra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That inking there was a lot different than what we saw in Y.
Certainly,
and it did detract, and the coloring as well was kind of muted there.
Mm-hmm.
It did detract from the book for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and listen to that one,
yeah.
But here, it didn't detract from the book, and it helped me enjoy it.
Sure.
Also, you look at the overall tone in the book as well. I mean, if you look at the first couple pages, they're really. Yeah, they're really gray tone. They're really dark.
Sort of almost a Sin City esque thing going on.
Yeah, that's really what noir is. But really, noir means when they say film noir, they mean film dark.
Yeah,
and it really was a dark setting for that. Then after that, it jumps to the vibrant red.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, you go from the vibrant red to the sex. Sex to the outside.
I must say, the color sex is such a wonderful choice to choose from here. You know,
it's my favorite color, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Glad you can count it on two hands. That joke from earlier.
Sorry. Oh boy! All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Go on about
you
the
had
story.
Had to be there, people. About the story. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the basically Vin's at a crossroads here because he could do one of two things. Either he can leave his old life behind, you know, become the Tango star and all that, and basically form a new life for himself with his you know, fuck buddy number four, and go off into.
Well, I think that's his ongoing girlfriend, and that's his Tango partner. And
all right. All right.
I think it's kind of neat that they actually have aspirations to compete and start a tango school in Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm. They actually have
Argentina
goals.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
They have goals, they have dreams, rather than just him hiding out as a tango dancer. It makes it a little bit more engaging, especially for the character.
Well, it happens with a lot of people. I mean, just because they used to be in crime doesn't mean that they can't have a life.
I want to make the best cannolis ever.
Really?
Yeah, really.
That's your goal?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was a hitman, that's why.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Not fried chicken?
There are enough blacks who make fried chicken. The market's already saturated.
At least I have chicken.
Shut up, whitefish.
Whitefish, I prefer tuna. Yeah, much more of a tuna guy. But yeah, okay. But anyway, going back to that, you know, he can do one of two things. Like we said, either he can go on with the rest of his life, or he can, quote unquote, close a chapter in his old life while at the same time possibly falling back into old problems.
Well, I think that chapter was closed until this girl shows up.
Yeah. Well, then he needs to think, are things actually closed, or is there still a little bit of an opening in the crack there?
It's like, do you pour salt in the wound to close it up, you know? You think a wound would, you know... Is there...
That hurts. That seriously hurts.
Well, it's true that, you know, do you put salt in the wound to close it up, you know? Or is it, you know, do you leave it open to heal that way? Because if you leave it open to heal that way, it's going to fester or it can open up again.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is a former girlfriend of his, obviously.
Or a fling.
Or a fling, yeah.
Or well, a black cat, tawdry sex slut, you know.
Well, I mean, the way that she's talking about him leaving and stuff, she obviously had feelings for him.
I would say that they were dating.
Yeah.
Or something, because she's always saying that he left her.
Yeah.
And but she sure knows how to make an entrance.
Yeah, that or they were partners in crime for the most part.
That's certainly possible.
That could be possible, but
maybe she was part of one of the crime families.
I have to say this one page splash with all the different sexy photos and the two giant sunglasses she's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Joke.
big joke.
Yeah, big joke. Nice. It's a nice page.
Well, all right, but then we get to the last page here, and I draw a question.
Whoa,
okay?
you're skipping way ahead.
Oh, I'm totally skipping way ahead.
I'm in the middle of the book.
I'm totally skipping way ahead.
Now that we're talking
ahead,
about the girl, yeah, let's discuss this because I am confused.
Me too. Now is this actually? I mean, is she a chick with a dick?
Is she? Man? Okay, we have to describe this because it's a poster, a picture, like it's a promotional poster.
Lady boy,
LAY space. Capital D, space, boy.
Maybe he's a bisexual.
Like lady, that's why it's lady boy. And then, or lay the boy.
Or lazy boy.
Lazy boy, also as well. Says, like men, like women, why choose? He didn't. I mean, literally, the H in the she is enlarged.
She,
so,
like many other things in this book, but.
Yeah. Chicks with dicks get their kicks with pool sticks. And then she's kind of laying there, spread eagle.
All right, that's it. It's official, Brent.
If you haven't put earmuffs on your kids by now, you need to do it.
Okay. If your other job fails, you can make a killing on advertising porn.
Radio porn advertising.
Yes.
All right, yeah.
Chicks with dicks get their ticks.
Get their ticks.
Get their
in
ticks.
In the woods. That doesn't rhyme.
With pool kicks.
Okay.
I love inside jokes.
Had
to
be there. Sorry.
Yeah, definitely. But
just come out to MechaCon next year. You'll know all the jokes.
So what do you think about this?
Bitch be tripping balls or has balls.
Well, we didn't even finish. It says she's laying there, not laying there. She's kind of like leaning back there, spread eagle. She's got half of a bra on.
In her backside pocket.
And it says shoot one in her backside pocket.
Yeah.
So why would you need to shoot one in the back?
But if you also there's a little bar which says. Shoot one, and then there are two balls underneath the bar, making a phallic image.
I get that, but need to cover the little...
Yeah, the penis.
It'd be hanging down.
Yeah.
You have one. You know how it goes.
Dangly parts.
Congratulations. I believe that's your brand new man pretty.
Thank you very much.
That one is going to go... That's going to be a clip, man. That's going to be a clip. That's your own fault. I'm sorry.
That's your next best of on the episode 100 clip show.
Dangly bits. Love my gumbo and my dangly bits. But, All right. But still, so, I mean, does this take into question what Vin...
Well, here, she's flat-chested, and then on the previous page that we were talking about, she's fully endowed.
Well, is this even the same girl? I don't know.
Freckles.
I mean,
and why would she be crying and stuff over this if it wasn't the same person?
I don't know.
Well, she said that she's being blackmailed, so it could be blackmailed by a friend, for a past. Maybe she was
phone a friend.
Maybe,
you know,
she was a dude at one time. We don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe this is the blackmail that she did these risque double penetration pictures. Well, there are two black men in the other pictures.
Really?
No. Look. Do you want me to show you? God. I'm not just picking on you.
Yeah, please.
That's part of it, but, you know.
You can't tell,
I mean,
Brandon.
Maybe this is the blackmail. Look, right there.
Earlier
two
on in the book we're talking
right
about.
There.
Yeah, we're back to the real first shot of her.
You guarantee that I'm... And not just two black males. I'm talking about black male, like U.S. Postal Service. Male. Sorry.
Black male is... I am blackmailing you, not Brandon is a black male.
Yes, right. Anyway, I'm thinking she is a woman. This is the blackmail. This is the embarrassment that somebody's distributing this photo of her before she got implants.
Yeah.
Right? And insinuating that she is a chick with a dick just because of the pool balls and the big black sticker over where her junk would be.
Maybe
if
she's
she
post-op.
Were a person.
Maybe she's post-op now.
Maybe, but. My digging over. I don't know. I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt and saying that Adrian Seabard and Randy Ramos did her too pretty for her to be a she-male.
All right.
And that this is the blackmail.
Or if worse comes to worse, we can ask Rodney Ramos when we see him tomorrow.
I plan on it.
Yes, certainly. We'll ask him. Did you draw a she-male?
No, he didn't draw it. He inked it.
Did he ink a she-male?
We'll just ask if you know he can clear some things up for us. Or
yeah.
Should we wait?
Well, and I mean this draws into doubt Vin also, because if this is Vin's ex, then I guess Vin might go both ways. I don't know.
Did he know or now he knows?
I don't know. Maybe he knew and that's why she's an ex.
Well, that's why he's half and half, you know.
All right. Tango. All right.
So, all right, fine.
So, Brandon, if you had to give this a rating, what would it be?
Out of five?
Yeah.
I'd probably say 3.5. It was a good start to a series, and I really enjoyed it.
3.5, so that means you'd be picking up the next issue by our standards.
Yeah.
I'd actually give it a 4. I really like this. I think I'm going to get the trade of this when it comes out. Just the reason, let me preface this.
Sure.
I would go and pick up the singles, except I didn't order them already.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it's going to be like. So, and it's 6 issues. I figure I'm definitely going to seek this trade out. It was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I'm in between whether I'm going to get singles or trades at this point.
So
I'm not sure.
Is this a new ongoing or is this a miniseries?
This is a miniseries.
Okay. So what was your rating, though?
My rating's a 4 also,
4?
Actually.
Okay.
I'm right there with you. It's certainly a strong start. Joe Kelly's one of my favorite writers, so I certainly want to see where this is going. And I might even pick it up at Midtown Comics at MidtownComics.com as it actually comes out.
Well, bang, there you go. Indie, I actually
Tango.
Liked. I was setting you up for that.
Yeah, all right. Oh, and by the way, before
cash.
You... Yeah, yeah. Wait, say it?
Cash.
Tango and Cash?
Yeah. Bang, Tango, Cash. You all suck. this is the 5th episode coming out this month, by the way. That's why there's no Heroes Corner ad and all that. However, check it out, heroescorner.com, all your discounts, CT Rocks, code 5%, all that. I don't want to first give you guys the books of the month when you only got 5 more days left to do this shit. So, yeah, that's basically where I am at this point.
No, they don't.
Oh, they don't?
The order day probably already passed.
No, actually.
The 26th right now.
No, the website said it had about 3 more days left.
Oh, it does?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's certainly getting close because I haven't put my order in yet.
Oh.
Yeah, so I got to do that. It's in my cart waiting to be sent.
Get on it.
I will once we're done recording here.
All right.
Tonto, get on it.
All right. Moving on.
All right. So, but. Best damn customer service around, heroescorner.com. You know my catchphrase, and you suck for that.
Get your fucking comic.
That's a better catchphrase.
Hey, look, 2 different covers. It's almost like they knew.
Wow, how about that? Well, okay, and the two different covers, again...
What are we talking about, Ian, first?
We're talking about Punisher number one.
The new series.
Yeah, the new series, Dark Reign tie-in. We got Rick Remender on it. We've got...
Jerome Pena.
So this is a team that's worked together before.
Yes, so I have not read, so...
Yes, neither have I. What have they worked on before?
Fear Agent?
Yes, indeed. Rick Fear Agent it is. And Mike McCone's cover here, you could tell was obviously the Photoshop, you know, replace and copy feature going on here. Because
Punisher looks the same.
Punisher looks exactly the same. It's basically just a different image in the whole.
I was going to ask if Norman Osborn, who actually looks like Harry Osborn because he looks so young, upside down anyway, it has as the Sentry, but actually doesn't.
No, he doesn't. So at least we know that they did indeed redraw that. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the face is similar.
All right,
I like that because it switches out the cover. I mean, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And right, they're doing this with the next couple covers. I think
they
number two's issues come out, and it's got a Doctor Doom or a Green Goblin like target that he's shooting at. Something like that. So it's nice actually to see Frank doing something on a cover, not just
Shooting a gun randomly, right?
Or standing there looking grim.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously this is a homage cover too, or homage.
Yes, homage to Punisher's first appearance. Amazing Spider-Man.
See, I say it the like the down home American way first with homage, and then I say it the French way with homage, just to get them both in there.
Edumacated way?
Yes, the edumacated way, exactly. So which of the two do you prefer, by the way?
I like my Sentry cover.
I like my Norman Osborn cover.
I don't know. They're pretty much the same covers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Well, it depends on which character you like better. He's crazy, but in an awesome way. He's crazy in a whiny way. So I'm going to go with Norman Osborn.
Well, I kind of like how the cover says, his mission, kill Norman Osborn. But first, he must contend with the Sentry. And the Sentry's right there on the cover, whereas yours is not.
Yeah, I know.
But then I guess it says, kill Norman Osborn, and he's got Norman Osborn in his crosshair. So it makes sense either way.
But the Sentry text is bigger.
But it's the first and the reason when Osborn.
It's a variant for a reason.
Get thee to a nunnery.
Okay there, Hamlet.
Oh, yours is the variant edition.
Yes, mine is the variant edition. Oh but watch variant edition podcast. When it comes out. Yeah, good times. So anyway.
To quote Jen and Chris from Amazing Podcast, facepalm.
Yes, thank you. And Travis will be here tomorrow, and he'll be part of the MegaCon wrap-up and all that jazz.
Raph is not here. Stop it.
Stop being Raph, Brandon. Seriously.
You don't have to edit this one. You're supposed to be professional.
MegaCon, forgive me!
There goes that.
Yeah, all right. Look out. So, all right. First off, very different style for almost every single Marvel character in this book.
Well, let's just talk about the series, though.
Sure.
I mean, Punisher War Journal.
Which was Matt Fraction.
But Rick Remender was helping out for the last couple issues.
Yes.
So my question is, I was reading Punisher War Journal. I was thoroughly enjoying it. Did we need a relaunch, a reboot, just for Dark Reign?
I think so.
You think so?
Well, not even just for Dark Reign. I think we needed a reboot, period. Because a Punisher book is going to get a lot more people to buy it without a subtitle. If it's just Punisher, because a lot of people think that it's an ancillary book. When you say Punisher War Journal, that sort of thing. It doesn't really sound like it's going to be the main Punisher book.
They did the War Journal thing to differentiate from the Max book.
I know that. But now Punisher Max is Punisher Max.
Does it say Max on the cover other than the logo?
It's known as, in every solicitation, Punisher Max. The Max is huge on it.
Gotcha.
So you can definitely tell the difference between the regular and the Max.
Well, I think also with the new mission, it does deem a new book now. You know, with War Journal, he was taking Crime on the Street. Now he's going back to his old roots again, taking on... Well, it dealt with a little, it was more of a personal book for the Punisher War Journal. Now I think he's going back to his original roots of, you know, taking out those who he deemed evil, who need to be punished again.
I have to disagree with you there. The original thing for Punisher War Journal was that he's actually going back and shooting supervillains. And that was, I have to say, that's what he's doing here. So the mantra is not the same.
It depends, because technically he's not going after supervillains.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I don't know what you're saying anymore, because
Norman Osborn is a villain. Maybe not in the public's eye,
currently in the Marvel Universe.
He's still defined as a villain, though. He's a villain that has power because of some stupid circumstance, because Brian Michael Bendis said, oh, after the Scroll Queen gets shot in the jaw by Hawkeye, he's going to get up again, and so Punisher can shoot her.
Okay.
Norman Osborn can shoot her.
But at the same time, because of the current state of the Marvel Universe, this is the first time that there's been a, sort of a moral crossroads for Frank here. I mean, does he go after somebody because they're in...
It could still be a war on crime and a war journal, or hell, just go the way the Batman the Outsiders just... Take off the War Journal, and this could be Punisher number 27.
Oh, please don't even get me started on Batman and the Outsiders.
No, but it's just a change of direction. It's a new team coming on.
Uh-huh.
It's a change of direction for the book. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. And how many times has that caused a number one to happen just because a new team is going on? Runaways?
Well, Runaways is not a regular good seller, thus you have the relaunches all the time.
It is a good seller, though,
but like they're putting out number one, so more and more people who have heard about the book will pick it up because, it's a new number one, it's a new number one. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, it's Punisher. He's a known character. He's had three feature films,
mm-hmm.
one of them good, Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my opinion.
I haven't seen the other ones, I can't say.
I haven't seen the other ones,
yeah.
But I don't really want to see the second
one. Dolph Lundgren.
I mean, if you look, think of like another book which has got a lot of relaunches, which was the Young Avengers also.
Yes.
If you really...
Those aren't even relaunches. Those just have miniseries.
Exactly. So would you say it would work best as Punisher had a continuation of miniseries?
No. Not for the character, no.
I'm not even arguing that. I'm arguing that this number one didn't need to happen because they've had changes in direction in books before, like Spider-Man.
I know.
They didn't launch with a new number one.
Well, but
this
still...
This is just a marketing thing, and it pisses me off because...
Yeah, I
was liking War Journal, and...
War Journal was not selling, and that's why. Punisher War Journal was not selling. I mean, if you look at the Diamond Charts...
I mean, after Cap left, it wasn't relevant. It went off and told its own story with G.W. Bridges, and I really enjoyed it. I read the whole damn series in singles, and I really liked that series. It was smart. It was well-written. I thought...
Did you like Chekin's art?
Yes, I did.
All right.
I thought that the World War Hulk issue, Ariel Olivetti,
shoot the shit
out of aliens.
Yeah.
It was double-sized. It was number 25. Great issue.
Mm-hmm.
When Secret Invasion came around, it was the same thing. It was a great issue. Why? Because Frank was just shooting the shit out of everybody.
That's what he does best. Yeah.
Exactly. But it was strong issues, and the Kraven arc was pretty good with the guy who did Atomic Robo, Scott Wegener.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Forgot his name.
Yeah.
Corey Walker did one, and then the Atomic Robo guy came on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just arguing that I don't think that it needed a relaunch just to put a Dark Reign banner on it, and for Rick Remender, who was helping out on the book before, to come on and take over.
Well, again, the way that I'm looking at it is, and again, you said that just because of marketing reasons you didn't want to say it. I say because of marketing reasons this had to happen, because like I said, Punisher War Journal was not selling well. Punisher, again, let me finish talking here before you want to interject. I see you're already opening your mouth.
Weird how that happens in person.
I know, right? So, yeah. And specifically, again, getting rid of the War Journal, I think, does help. Because just calling Punisher, knowing that this is the main Punisher book to read, helps out. And making it a number one, I think, was a necessary thing to do here.
It's like Invincible Iron Man and Iron Man Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
You know, people will jump onto Invincible Iron Man because they think that's the main book. And
yes.
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Your mouth is here, by the way.
Just so you know.
Your mouth is here.
Yeah. I don't know. Bite the mic, though. That's why.
Yeah, I know. But you can hold it like that so the mic can actually pick you up. Yeah. There you go.
Just imagine you're a rapper or you're gay, okay?
I would be a gay rapper.
Even better.
Like from the Boondocks?
Yeah. All right.
But I mean, like, more people are apt to read a book without a subtitle to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state of mind where, you know, saying, okay, this is more information that I may not get. Backstory.
Especially if you're used to not seeing a subtitle. I mean, for years, it was just called Punisher.
Yeah.
You know, and then they went with the whole subtitle thing. I mean, there were four Punisher books for a while. You remember that one? It was like Punisher War Journal and Punisher, and it was like Punisher War Crimes or something like that, and there were all these other books out there. When they had like 500 books for every single character.
Oh, the 90s.
And yet Punisher was always the one that sold the best, you know? For Spider-Man, it started off as Amazing Spider-Man. So, you know,
If you think of like X-Men, you know, you have your Uncanny. You have your Astonishing. You have your adjectiveless. And, of course,
I think they should actually call it Adjectiveless X-Men on the cover, by the way.
I mean, like, more prone to read adjectiveless or Uncanny because... Uncanny's been around the longest. Adjectiveless is the book. It's the action book for the most part.
it's X-Men Legacy now. It's been not been adjectiveless.
Yeah, because it's had an adjective
time.
For a while now. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Suffix?
Yeah, suffix.
Suffix. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Suffix, which is as bad, by the way. But, okay. Anyway, let's talk about the book itself and stop talking about marketing, all right?
All right. I'm just saying I was... Well, I mean, because War Journal ended, I read this book, and I don't feel like I have to continue on, whereas if this were Punisher War Journal 27...
Come on, man.
I liked it, but, I mean...
If you liked it, why the hell wouldn't you think...
It gave me a clean jumping-off point, though. Listen to this.
All right.
It gave me a clean jumping-off point. It said, Punisher War Journal story is over because we're launching a new book in a new direction. And therefore, if I wanted to, and I was looking for something to cut, I jumped on... War Journal simply for Civil War's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened I liked Matt Fraction's writing, first exposure to him.
Yeah.
I liked Ariel Olivetti's art when Chaykin came on. I liked it because he'd done some Wolverine stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued to pick it up and I liked the ongoing story there. So when it ended, and it pretty much had almost a clean ending with it, with the storylines and stuff, it gave me a clean break. You know, whereas if this were number 27, I might have another. It would still be on my pull list on Heroes Corner website.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, okay. And at the same time, let me bring up an example for you here, okay? Thunderbolts. When Thunderbolts switched over from the, from the previous storyline that Nicieza was doing and stuff like that, and then it went over to the Warren Ellis Thunderbolts, they didn't bother to change the number.
Right, they were going
that
to
was
new
their
direction.
Decision. Right, new direction because they pimped it because they knew Warren Ellis is a name that you can sell. They didn't need a number one. In order to sell more issues. Because people knew this is the first Warren Ellis book, and you can do stuff like that. A name like Rick Remender, while it might be familiar, I don't think is enough to say, hey, new writer, new story arc, buy a book, brand new concept, still Punisher War Journal. Would not have worked.
It's like, say we cross over, it's like a DC book, you know, say you put Geoff Johns in the book. You mm-hmm. don't have to market saying, oh, it's going to be new number one. As opposed to like you put someone like... another ancillary writer from DC, like
Bedard.
Yeah, Tony Bedard. Exactly. If you put him on, you might have to start over with a new number one to get interest in it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and that's the way you go.
But they didn't do that when Bedard and McKeever and the other new writer that was on Countdown jumped on Teen Titans. They've all been on it. You know what I mean? But
yeah. Well, okay.
I don't know. There are other examples where the books continued to sell. And War Journal, you're right, was not selling, so it may not be the best example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, okay.
But for me, I would have kept on picking up had it been War Journal.
All right. Well, so you don't think you're going to pick up Punisher number two?
No.
No? Okay.
I liked it, but it doesn't...
What if I hand it to you and you like it and you want to pick it up because you liked it and you... Because it's in the other room right now.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, I can hand it to you right now.
All right, well, I may read it.
After you're done reading it, if you want to pick up number three after that, I guess there you go. But I guess that's like feeding a crack addict crack and then telling him he needs to buy his own crack after that. But, you know, hey. You're right. You're Jones in there,
well,
Brandon? You're right?
The other thing, though, with this issue, getting into the story, do you need a moment for yourself? Getting into the story, though, I mean, just on a first issue alone, this issue, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It was action.
Yeah, which is what a Punisher
Virtually
story should be.
Nothing else happened,
yes.
though. Which is why I didn't jump on and go get the second issue on, from a local comic book shop when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't enough to hook me in the story
in
this issue. Even though it was good and there was a lot of action happening, there wasn't enough story other than, I must kill Norman Osborn for unsaid reasons.
Yeah.
That made me say,
well, not
oh, I
not
need
just
to go
unsaid
get number
reasons.
Two.
Not just unsaid reasons. He's Norman fucking
why.
Osborn. That's
he
why.
Knows his fucking Norman Osborn is a fucking jerk and nut job.
Yeah.
That's why. But I mean, there's no plot in here really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean, it's just straight up action. And you would say, well, the plot is he's shooting Norman Osborn, and the Sentry is working for Norman Osborn now, and stops him, fight ensues.
Well, I would say that the plot is. He gets helped by a mysterious benefactor, and we got to find out who the hell that is in the next issue. That's the plot. You know, he's going after Norman like he always does. He's a Punisher. That's what he does. But when all of a sudden he's being helped out by random stranger that we don't know who the hell it is, I'm intrigued enough
just
to go and pick it up.
Just at the very end of the issue, though.
Yes, and that's what...
Not consistently throughout.
Yeah.
But to me, though, that random stranger is not enough to go get number two.
All right.
That's just the hook, though. That's just the hook to bring you back, saying, okay, look, this person got Frank out of situation A.
Yeah.
And you, at the very end of the book, you see Frank pass out and says, "But I think he says you're welcome to him." Yeah, you know, continue next issue to read what happens. But I think the whole crux of the issue or the whole plot actually happens within that first page. And you know, you're reading the thought bubble. I guess you can call it a thought bubble or narration by Frank. It says, in war, there are no rules. You know, 200 years ago, the British learned this fact the hard way, courtesy of a bunch of guys who picked up their guns and ran in the bush and sprang their pale, tea-drinking asses. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I think, a lot of times, especially in the Punisher, you have to take conventionality out away from the book.
Yeah.
You can't be...
He's the Punisher.
Right. You know, he's known for doing things over the top.
I mean, what power does he have? He punishes people.
I agree that a Punisher book is not going to have as much plot as another book like Batman's detective book. Punisher is going to be I shoot people.
They tried.
I recognize.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, you remember when they tried to do the mystical shit in Punisher back in the 90s? That was messed up.
No, I don't.
Yeah, no. There was a time there when he was like a like what was he like a almost like a Ghost Rider type thing where his soul came back from hell or something like that.
Yeah, I think like he was being condemned for stuff he did.
Something like that. Yeah,
he had atoned for it. I mean, like Punisher should really be called Shit Blows Up Monthly. Really should.
Well, I mean, if they had to resort to that in the 90s, maybe it's the difference between the Punisher being a strong character or somebody who really can't carry his own book and storylines throughout if you're going to do superhero stuff. I mean, I recognize that they've had Punisher Max over a time, but they're doing they found something that sticks here.
Maybe this would be better as a maxi series or a mini series? You know, like just 12 issues?
I don't know. I'm saying my point, though, is obviously the conventional crime stories for Punisher works. Like what they've been doing in the movies.
Yeah.
Gangsters, pimps, etc. Right?
Gypsies, fools, and thieves. Yeah, those
whatever.
Guys,
I mean,
yeah.
So, but the superhero and other stuff maybe necessarily hasn't worked, which is why maybe Punisher War Journal failed. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe people didn't latch onto it, and they're still doing the same essential stick, Punisher Returns to Marvel Universe, you know, round two.
Well, and
so who's to say this is not just going to last 25 issues, and they're either going to cut it or start a new one, and by 25 issues, we'll be into the next phase of the Marvel Universe.
I wouldn't be surprised
if
that does
happen. It won't be Dark Reign anymore.
I mean, hell, it was pretty awesome, though, what he did in this issue to Sentry, you know, fooling him the way he did.
Well, I think, again, to use a word like you used last in Synergy, you know, it's juxtaposition. You know, you have the Punisher who has absolutely no power. He's a guy with a bunch of guns. You know, he's in there with a bunch of people who have powers, who have suits, who have all this. Punisher's the guy running around in a Kevlar suit, you know, with a skull, with a white skull on his chest.
And I'm the guy with the gun.
And on a black shirt, which doesn't stand a lot at all in the dark alley, right?
Hey, I'm just happy he's back to the full outfit now, you know?
Yeah, no simple shit. But, I mean, like, you got to think, Punisher is almost a little bit like Batman. Yeah, his power is mostly in his mind. It's all psychological. And
all about the mission.
Yeah, it's all about the mission. The thing is, the fact that he's one step ahead of a lot of the heroes a lot of times says a lot for the character.
Well, this is almost a Batman versus Superman issue right here.
Mm-hmm.
You have Marvel Superman, newly minted, you know, still got the shine on him. Maybe not now. It's a little bit getting a little bit dirty. Working for Norman.
With about four more personalities.
Working for Normie's getting a little bit dirty.
About four more personalities than Clark Kent's ever
that
had.
That too. But in Marvel's Batman, essentially, not the Moon Knight knockoff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the guy who has nothing but his wits and his muscles
and his guns, which is
the difference from Batman.
But before you finish saying this, what does it say that Marvel's Batman knockoff has multiple personality disorder and the Superman knockoff also has multiple personality disorder?
That DC's better?
Yeah, there you go. All right. Continue. Yeah, you're right. That's right. They are saner Jesus. Anyway, continue.
I liked it. Not, it was great. I would say I liked Bang Tango more than this one.
You liked it, you didn't love it.
I liked it, I didn't love it.
All right. But
you liked it as an issue, but not enough to stay on the book.
Yes.
Well, and what's good about this, though, and what I am enjoying about it, I mean, I know that Warzone was supposed to be more grounded and stuff, but it's nice that with this sort of concept, you're going to be able to get more of the superheroes actually involved in a Punisher book.
But for me, though, this issue right here almost felt like a one-shot, because or pretty much self-contained, and maybe that was part of my problem, is that he starts off with Norman Osborn, has a fight with Sentry, and then basically loses Sentry and ends right there. It's not... The cliffhanger is not Sentry standing over him, I found you. It's basically the fight with Sentry is over for now.
Yeah.
And there's some mysterious benefactor, but that's not enough to get me to the next issue.
Until next Tuesday when he tries again.
I mean, it's like, make a comparison to DC again, but it's like, you know, when Paul Dini writes Detective, it's a detective book for Batman, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have Grant Morrison, that's the more superhero-y book, right?
Yeah.
So I can, if they were to make this along with Punisher War Journal,
mm-hmm.
and have Punisher War Journal be the ancillary title.
Yeah, but he cannot carry two books in this
I
in this climate.
Punisher,
all right. Well, no. Punisher Max is totally different, though. It's a totally different story. Yeah, but it's a different Punisher. All right.
I think Punisher actually can carry two books. Mm-hmm. Honestly, there's enough fan base for him, so one book will drop off here and there. That's why you have to have the Punisher. You have to have a story which will kind of balance out between the both of them, though, to have the readership go from one to the other.
Is there enough Punisher fan base, though? I mean, obviously, there wasn't enough Punisher fan base to rally about, you know, Thomas Jane not coming back to the second Punisher movie.
Well, no.
Obviously,
a lot of people didn't like him. That was a crappy script.
Yeah. I know a lot of people didn't like Thomas Jane in that Punisher movie.
I enjoyed him.
I thought he was good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how well did that Punisher movie do? How big is the Punisher fan base, really?
Not nearly as big as other characters
because
in the Marvel.
Because if you look at the sales of the Max book, I guarantee you they won't be as much as this number one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the movie all boils down to marketing, if you really think about it. I mean, this was, I think the Punisher War Journal movie was actually the third movie done for the Marvel Universe line. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't marketed as much as, say, Punisher.
Not even close.
Punisher
yeah.
One.
Well, they knew what they had. That's why they knew what they had.
They thought they can probably capture Lightning Bottle again.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, I think Punisher One either made bank or barely made. Or you can make a sequel if you don't make bank for a movie. Also, I mean, it's dependent upon the studio.
I mean, Fantastic Four barely made bank.
Yeah.
And it got Fantastic Four too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, like.
Say it, damn it.
Which Fantastic Four 2 was a lot better. Not that they can hear me.
Yeah. But I mean, like, damn it, I lost my point. Thank you.
All right, no. The bank.
I mean, money. It's all about marketing. I believe if Marvel were to hype up War Journal or to hype up this book saying this is going to be the killer book of the year,
They
would have the fan base turn out again. I mean, movies and comic books are marketed for completely different audiences.
Sure.
I mean, if you think about it, you have to market a movie for a massive audience.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they'll do things where the fans will utterly reject it or utterly hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And with a comic book, you know your fan base. If you can pander to your fan base, you can have a successful book. That's why I think why a writer like Matt Fraction is a good example.
Yeah,
you know, he panders to his fan base. He knows what they want, and he gives them what they want.
Sure, I mean that's what he's done with Iron Man. That's what he's done with Uncanny as a co-writer.
Exactly.
He's done everything. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at his order, also his order was it started off kind of slow. It was a little bit of an introspective book.
Actually, his order was originally number 7, but they were out of fried rice.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it picked up real quick, and it became that slam bam book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think. With the way this book starts off with the Punisher, you know, you have Punisher taking on the Sentry. You know, they freaking shoots him in the neck, even though you know it won't hurt him,
mm-hmm.
just to distract him so he can drop him. Then pulls the ass on him. You know, even though he knows that won't kill him, it won't even mess up his
It'll
hair.
It'll still slow him down.
It'll slow him down. That's what I think. This could be that action movie every week. You know?
All right. But let's ask the important question. Actually, after Brent talks, go ahead, Brent. What were you gonna say?
No, you should ask that because I'm just gonna point out that. There are only 3 ads in this 22 pages of story.
Which
this is a $3.99 book.
Well, I was just gonna get there.
Okay, it's a $3.99 book. There are only 3 ads in the story.
Are they house ads or are they ad ads?
Two of them are house ads. The other one's for Joe Kubert's school.
Okay.
And then the back of the book. I mean, the story almost ends 2 pages after the staple.
Yeah.
The back of the book is like the Punisher saga.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. And it's the Ohatmu of Punisher.
Is this necessary? I mean, again, we're talking about a number one here, so of course Marvel's going to charge $3.99. You would fully expect, and I'm sick and tired of this bullshit, where they give us a book, they give us a number one, where it's $3.99, where it's supposed to be a very special issue, like an issue.
It's not even double size.
It's not even double size, right, exactly. And I mean, we're getting ancillary material that we don't fucking need in the book. And I mean, what the hell? Why would we be picking up a Punisher book if we didn't know his history?
And then also, I bet you 6 months in the fucking line, the saga will be free.
Yes.
They'll be on Free Comic Book Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daredevil saga.
Yeah,
you know?
Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
Secret Invasion saga.
Mm-hmm.
Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I bet you right now on May's
War of Kings saga. Yeah.
May 2nd. I tell you right now, that's Saturday, right here. Mm-hmm. Free. This is gonna be a Free Comic Book Day giveaway.
Definitely.
If you're gonna make it a Free Comic Book giveaway, don't put it in the fucking book. Honestly.
I know.
We're gonna get it anyway. We're gonna read it no matter what.
I like how we've all just developed the word fuck like all of a sudden after I said it one time. But anyway, yeah.
It pisses me off that you know you that we get a book of 22 pages story, three pages ad,
mm-hmm.
and we have. Was it 8 or 10 pages of consecutive saga?
Yeah, and then they put the preview for Agents of Atlas in there.
Yeah,
yeah. It's 11.
11.
11. Okay. Wait, 12, 13. 14 pages.
Yeah, 14
of Punisher
pages.
Saga.
Yeah, give me 14 more pages of story.
And he doesn't have that much history.
And no,
the 14 pages they put in there, they put in stuff that no one would ever want to know about Punisher. They put in the '80s and. Bullshit.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here that I did not read this the first time through,
uh-huh.
the Punisher Saga.
Yeah.
When I read it the second time last week, thinking we were going to record, I did actually read through it a little bit, but I got bored really quickly.
Yeah.
Because, Punisher faces off against Doombots. Like, really, is that a necessary story to tell? This is my whole point. Punisher doesn't have necessary classic stories. They didn't even mention the Marvel Knights Punisher in here.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They don't mention what happened in Civil War barely. They don't mention what happens in Secret Invasion barely.
They didn't even mention what happened in his last book.
Yeah, War Journal gets two paragraphs in this 14-page thing.
Yeah.
And that was 26 issues. That's the most recent history of the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should have a whole lot to do with Punisher met Captain America finally and went through a crisis of conscience
mm-hmm.
and killed his friend or something like killed his friend's girlfriend. He eventually went nuts. I mean,
yeah.
That was what I liked about Punisher War Journal. And we have some story about him and Moon Knight teaming up, fighting aliens, and him and Captain Marvel teaming up.
Well, you know what this means. This was definitely an old Mahatmu, which was repurposed. You know, they tacked on the extra two paragraphs about what was happening in his life previously.
And just put in a bunch of pictures.
And put in a bunch of pictures, yeah. I mean, that's not even close to the sort of thing we should be getting. I mean, if anything, commission a freaking backup. And
exactly.
put that
yes.
in the book.
Origins and Omens.
Thank you.
Thank you. Exactly. Origins and Omens is what 8 pages of extra story.
Pretty much.
And you get an actual full story there. You get a beginning, a middle,
by
and
the
end.
Actual writers of the book.
Right. And
yeah.
you get a little bit of introspective of what's going to happen in Darkest Night,
mm-hmm.
in Blackest Night. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to give us 14 pages of a filler for the most part,
mm-hmm.
either seven more pages of story yeah. and 7 pages filler.
I was shocked when I read this, to tell you the truth. I mean, when I got to that last page, I was like, okay, what now?
I mean,
and then I turned to the next page and I see it's Punisher Saga. I'm like, why did I pay $3.99 for this book?
I mean, I bet you tomorrow we'll get a saga for free also.
Probably, yeah.
You didn't pay $3.99, you paid it cheaper for it.
At heroescorner.com. Yes.
All right, but what I will say, with these saga books, especially the character ones, like the Daredevil one has it, the Punisher one has this, I like this reading chronology page.
Yes, that is good.
It tells you the trades, basically what order to read them.
This is all you needed, though. This was all you needed. You did not need the rest of the saga.
I know you don't need the saga to understand the Punisher, but I'm saying if you read this and said, I want to read more Punisher, this gives you a place to go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the one page that should have been in there.
This needs, yeah, I agree. And I'm commending Marvel for this because they put it in the Daredevil saga.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they should put these things in books more often.
Oh, sure.
Not the number ones and not the sagas.
Just put them in
put
there.
Put it in the anniversary
mm-hmm.
issues.
Yeah.
Hey, we've had 5 trades since the last
Agents
one.
Of Atlas, you put that shit in there. You let them know everywhere Agents of Atlas have been, you know?
But another thing about the saga thing is, I mean, with the Daredevil saga, it didn't start off saying, "Oh, Matt Murdock was a son of a boxer," and his, you
mm-hmm.
know, got. No, it started off with his most current.
Matt Murdock's father was a seminal boxer, not him.
No, Matt Murdock was a son of a boxer.
No,
son of a boxer.
Yeah, Matt Murdock's father was a boxer, not Matt Murdock.
Matt Murdock was a son of a boxer.
I thought you said Seminole
boxer.
Okay, yeah.
Florida joke. FSU sucks. Go Gators.
Seminole every single time you said that. I don't know why.
I heard Seminole.
Yeah, okay, good. Anyway.
Not in that sense.
So, Brendan, you were saying.
I mean, it starts off with his most recent history. I think it talked about how he got married again and how his life was completely shut off after that. That's what I liked about the saga. Oh, please don't. I mean, it's a... I think Marvel is just really wasting their time by putting the sagas in in this book.
Yeah.
And I think this would have been a lot better if they gave us a longer preview of Agent Atlas, not just the two pages.
I know.
Or, like you said before, give us a backup.
Yeah, please. Come on. Well, okay. You're telling me, with all the money that Marvel makes, and I mean, they just came out with their annual profits. And sure, they say their publishing business isn't doing that much, but everything else is. They just signed Samuel L. Jackson to a 9-picture deal.
Or hell, give us a reprint of another story.
Yeah. Did you guys hear about that, by the way?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Samuel L. Jackson has been signed to a 9-picture deal with Marvel Studios as Nick Fury. So he will be playing Nick Fury in at least 9 movies. But that's not the point. What the point is? Let me see.
We're taking pictures now.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. We're taking pictures now. All right. But yeah. So. Nicely done. But all right, yeah, we're being silly right now. We're taking pictures. That's not the point. But let me finish saying this before I lose my train of thought. That I mean, they make enough money on the movies and all that. Tell me they could not have commissioned at least 10 pages here from somebody, even a nobody writer. And get that shit done.
And it's not like, you know, where Warner Brothers is, or it's like,
yes,
where Warner Brothers does one thing and he says nothing. No, this is Marvel. Marvel does all their own shit.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, though, I don't think that the Marvel movie money is Marvel Comics money.
No, it is. It is.
It's all the same company? Marvel Entertainment.
All right, well, they're using that movie money to make more movies, not to push the comic books.
Yes, and they should be using it for everything.
Yes, and the thing is, it's under one Marvel umbrella. That's their money they can use for...
It's not like Warner Brothers in DC, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, the movie business helps support the comics. I get that, yes. Mm-hmm. And if you want to use the money that you make from the movies, making movies, but that's why you have producers.
Movie business is their sugar daddy.
Yeah, that's why they have producers. That's why they have backers. That's why they have studios also. It's not Marvel Studios making these movies anymore. It's Marvel Entertainment with help of certain studios.
Mm-hmm.
The studios pay the money. Marvel pays the fees for using the studios. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. Marvel gets the cap of the money.
Yeah.
And they used to license the characters out, so I guess.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So, all right. Okay. Well, what about the art? Did you like the art in this book?
Wow.
Let's actually get back to talking about the book and not the necessity of it.
The email address for Comic Timing is... I enjoyed the book a lot. I enjoyed that Sentry actually looks scary for the first time. Yeah, and did shit, which is great. And Norman Osborn, even though he didn't look like Tommy Lee Jones like he does in Dark Avengers,
looks weird enough that he does kind of look like what he does in Dark Avengers.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So, I mean, I liked it. It was sort of like a cross between...
Wait, I'm sorry, is this picture right here, it's after Frank jumps out of the building and he's chaining himself...
You know, I do have my own copy. I can look at it myself.
Well, yeah. I'm talking Brandon.
All right, this
shot right here on the right-hand side of the Sentry... Does that look like maybe he's getting sucked off or something? That's kind of like his face.
I hate
it's
you
Greg
all.
It's Greg Land. Right? He's aping Greg Land. Oh my god!
Instead of female,
this is quite possibly the
it's
worst
kind of homoerotic, and at the fact
this is the worst turn a Comic Timing episode has ever con.
Yellow skin tight uniform.
I'm sorry, folks.
Long,
this is the final episode of Comic Timing
with holes like close to where the nipples are. You know.
So anyway,
it's like looking at an Abercrombie bag.
Why do I like these people? I mean, why do I associate with these people? I don't understand. But okay, all right.
Because I give you a reason to come down to Florida once a year.
Point well taken. But all right, let me talk about the art a little bit. Can I do that without talking about being sucked off?
Go ahead,
thank you.
Ahead.
All right, good. Shut up. So I think the art is like sort of like a cross between Lionel Francis Yu and even a little bit of Chaykin in there.
Yes. I will agree with you there.
Yeah, like I mean,
being fans of them both, yes.
Yeah, because it's not quite. Well, again, it's sort of like more of the gritty style that we saw in Bang Tango a little bit. You know, more of a noir style thing going
on. I would say Bang Tango stuff was a little bit more cleaner.
All right,
being as there's not, this has
not an as many
insane
hatch lines.
Amount of hatch lines.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you can call it like film grain for the most part.
Something like that
on the book.
Yeah.
I mean, it does give it a little bit of a grainy grittiness to the book.
Like a Finch type thing, right? Yeah.
I just want to know, where in New York in Secret Invasion did they fight? Because this New York looks like it was trashed, but I thought they fought in Central Park. in that last final battle. I know details. I'm just busting some balls.
Yeah,
I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, no, the big scroll invasion happens in Times Square. Is that where this is supposed to be? But this looks like a bombed out. No, it looks like Times Square. It has the two avenue streets. I see it on TRL all the time. Come on.
Wait, hold on. Actually,
come on, New Yorker.
That's Times Square. That's Times Square.
Yeah, but that it wasn't that bad in the Secret Invasion book. This looks like it was bombed out, like fucking Hiroshima.
Don't forget, Baxter Building's in Times Square. Isn't that near Times Square also? In the,
yeah, you're right.
And that shit blew up good.
That's true.
Just the top of it, though.
Just the top of it.
Just the tip.
The rest of it is
just
better.
Just the tip. I didn't put everything in. Just the tip.
All right. So we thought the writing was great, not awesome. We thought good, not great. We thought the art was good. What do you rate
I really like Jerome Opinion's art. I'll say
so do I. Very suiting for a Punisher book. I'll certainly say that.
Yes, he's somebody I'm going to seek out more, I think, now that I've been exposed.
Another thing, yet again, the coloring in the ink was good.
To go back to my film analogies for so far, I mean, if Bang Tango was like an action film, mm-hmm. this is like an indie film for the most part.
Okay.
It has like that real...
Well, again, these are indie creators,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it's got the real indie feel to the book. I think it brings it more of a grassroots feel to the book also.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed Jerome Opinion is listed as artist, not as penciler. And if you look at this Sentry shot, I think this is all taken from pencils.
Oh, yeah.
See how there's not as much mm-hmm. black in the cape and stuff.
Yeah,
and
see that.
That makes sense for the, you know, the hatching and the pencil, all the grittiness.
So there was no inker in this.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That makes sense. And I really like this.
Yeah. No, it's very cool.
Humberto Ramos in Avengers Initiative is doing straight from pencils,
mm-hmm.
I think, and this looks a little bit better than this. I don't know if it's colors or what.
Yeah.
So would you like compare it to like Palmiotti, where he just goes right to pencils or goes right to inks also, or something like that?
No. This may be done from ink. I mean, I don't know. It looks pretty sharp. I honestly don't know.
Well, okay.
I can't say.
What about
it
when...
It looks like it's done from pencils, though. If you look at the black areas where it's all black, other than this, you know, sight thing, like on this page here and stuff. Yeah, well, look at the shoe or, you know, the cape and stuff. It looks like pencil.
Well, isn't this a little bit more like when LaRocca would do the pencils and then they go straight to colors after that? On, like, Extreme X-Men and shit?
Yeah.
Wasn't that all digital stuff, though?
That was all digital, yeah.
Digital, you go from digital pencil...
But I'm sure that this is all digital also. Nobody uses not digital anymore.
Well, no. What do you mean? He's not drawing on a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the colorists here. Yeah.
This is on paper. He's drawing on paper. He's talking about LaRocca doing digital pencils.
All right, I got you.
I thought LaRocca would do digital pencils and shoot it off to a colorist.
Clayton Crane.
Right. Yeah, I'm getting that confused in my head then. All right. Well, what do we rate the issue? Since we've been talking about it for the last 40 minutes and didn't bother to actually talk about the issue itself.
All right, I will say I'll give it a 3, mm-hmm. but, you know, usually when I say a 3, I'm picking up the next issue, but here I'm not because I already explained it. It felt like a one-shot. To me, it feels like the story's done. I got what I needed from it. Punisher fights Sentry.
All right, 3.5 for me. I did order the second issue. It's sitting, you know, right here, right now in the other room. And I want to see where it's going. I don't even think I actually finished War Journal. I've got like 5 to 10 issues just sitting there waiting to be read eventually. But I don't feel like I needed to read those to read this. You get what I'm saying? I mean, this is definitely a new story that I'm sort of looking forward to here because I like Remender. So that's where I am.
To quote Epic Man, 3.25 stars.
Yes! Are you going to pick up more?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, my Marvel buying habits have been sporadic really lately, and mm-hmm. it's only because I've been forgetting which books are coming out and when they come out. But it's no knock on the book itself.
Maybe trade?
Probably a trade. Okay. I mean, I have friends at work who are big Punisher fans, so I can say, "Oh, hey, read this, see if you like it. See if you like him. Use him as a gauge, I guess."
Okay. Now, before we talk about Final Crisis number 7,
it's the Final Crisis.
Yeah. Before we talk about Final Crisis number 7, I must grab the beers.
Spoilers.
Does anybody have a bottle opener?
They're twist off.
They're twist off. I forgot.
Yeah.
All right. Now, everybody, again, before we talk about Final Crisis number 7, this is a live show. This is totally a live show on 3. 1, 2, 3. Okay, now everybody take their first sip. All right? Okay? All right?
We're not, Sean Whalen.
We're not chugging. Everybody, okay. All right. Oh my God, it makes sense.
Clarity.
Awesome.
Oh, whoa.
Oh my God. Oh. Wow.
That's a reference to the DC wrap-up episode 84 when I argued with Sean Whalen. Stop laughing.
It ain't going
to
happen.
I basically told him I thought you had to be drunk to understand Final Crisis. And at that point, 7 had not come out yet.
Yeah.
Was I right or what?
You were really fucking right, dude. All right, I'm sorry, okay?
Okay,
right.
By this time, we'll preface it. By this time, you've all listened to reviews of Final Crisis
please.
On every other podcast.
Yes, yes.
I realize that. I would say if you didn't understand it, what's going on, go to Comic Geek Speak and download Murd Goes Over, Final Crisis number 7, and
panel
Superman
by panel.
Beyond 2.
Yeah.
It is great, panel by panel. I had the books in front of me when I listened to that. It cleared up a lot
mm-hmm.
of shit.
Okay.
But, however, I'm still confused. I've listened to CGS explain it. I've listened to 11 O'Clock Comics explain it. Bullets explain it. I've listened to Murd explain it. And I'm still not satisfied with it.
And before Brandon says anything, before we even finish talking about this, let me also remind everybody, no, we didn't forget about G-Man. It didn't come out yet, all right? So we're going to do that on the next review corner. I forgot to mention that earlier. Brandon.
I think we need people from Q-Paw to look this over because this, I mean, there is so much stuff packed in this book. It's like, I don't want to compare it to Watchmen, but sometimes you really got it because there's just so much stuff in the book which is happening all at one time.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what's going on, your brain's going to be really screwed over.
Well,
for a mind fucking half right here.
First of all, Super Rock Man Obama, I think was a
Super Rock Man Obama.
yeah, Super Rock Man Obama. I mean, I'm sure that they're not going to say that was you know a nod to him or something like that, but it totally was, dude.
That's a nice Jericho.
It's nice, and I liked the gold and the red there.
Well,
it's,
actually,
it's nice.
Well, if we go back to what Murdo said, mm-hmm. I believe this is a nod. This is actually a nod to not only prior Superman reaction, but a nod to the actual continent where this Superman is actually from.
Okay,
I guess they were kind of based off another part of history, like that was their version of Africa.
Okay.
And this is that color scheme is actually used there, and then
right.
we have Amazon in there also.
Gotcha, okay.
Thank you, Editor's Note, for letting us know.
Yes, I know. Okay, all right, well, okay, here's what I want to say here, okay? Number one, you remember at the end of Zero Hour when they had that huge timeline
yes.
that they printed?
Yes.
They needed one of those in this, okay? Because I had no idea when events were taking place. I understand that it was supposed to be broken up and sort of choppy and not really understanding everything, but when you read this book for the first time, you have no idea
yes.
what the hell you're reading.
I mean, there's a difference between nonlinear storytelling and I have to be high on acid drunk storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. But, like, here's my justification for this. For me, nonlinear storytelling is a page in the past.
Yeah.
A couple pages in the past. Then we'll jump back, and the first time it'll say 3 days before.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know
right.
the pages in the warehouse are in the present, and the pages at the office are in the past.
And they didn't bother to do that.
And
either.
They can jump back and forth here, and whatever, they didn't bother to do that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we go from, at some point in the time in the future, at the beginning with Black Superman, into the distant, distant past, as far as the story is concerned. No. Into the recent past where everything's destroyed.
This book had ADD.
Right? And then we go from there back to where we left off at issue number 6 with Superman holding Batman's
yeah.
carcass.
Which really should have been page 1.
Yes.
It's like, I think throughout the whole entire series, we've only seen one editor's note. And I think that was in
yeah.
that was in 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said this takes place after Final... This takes place after Final Crisis.
Superman Beyond. Yeah.
Superman
yeah.
Beyond
which, by the way, really should have been... Final Crisis number 6.5
yes,
or whatever.
Yes. Okay, I will tell you this. I read number 7.
Mm-hmm.
I went out and bought... I have 2 copies of this.
Mm-hmm.
Both Superman covers.
Okay.
I bought it because I knew I could not hold back in listening to podcasts and news and shit without spoiling
yeah,
myself. I
yeah.
wanted to read. So I went and bought this and read it before I had read Superman Beyond number 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I have got the insider's view or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like the guy who said, I don't need to get Superman Beyond number 2 because I read this before I did
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah.
So, and in the trade, or this is just going to be Final Crisis 1-7.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is not going to have Superman Beyond number 2. And
what the hell did you just do? For those of you who didn't just experience this, he's only drank about a third of his beer and yet already act stupid because that was bad. That was bad.
Yeah, but all those right. were hours ago.
Yeah, those were hours ago, man. It shouldn't be affecting you now. There was no
You've
backing on his chair. He just leaned all the way back and just hurt his noggin. But all anyway, right. all right, so, continue.
You know, I'm really kind of upset that...
You have a mic, Brent.
I know, sorry. Yeah, I'm really kind of upset that I read... I'm upset that I didn't understand who Mandrake was when I read Final Crisis number 7.
Yes.
He came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people will argue that, oh, no, technically that's not true because so-and-so was released before or whatever. But for shipments and stuff and for people who skip it, and especially if you're not going to put him in the goddamn trade, this is a mistake.
It doesn't make any sense.
Especially, and here's my point. Here's my main issue. Superman Beyond 1 and 2 need to be in the Final Crisis trade.
I guarantee it'll be in the Absolute.
Whatever. I don't think it merits one.
I know.
On the first
But they're
going to
make one. Yeah.
But let me finish. It needs it, A, because of the story, because Mandrake is the big bad here in this issue. Mm-hmm. So where does he first show up, and where do you get the history of who and what he is? Final Crisis Superman Beyond number 2.
Mm-hmm.
1 and 2, right?
Yeah.
And B... And I know they're just going, oh, well, you know, Infinite Crisis didn't have the specials in it because they were related to the prequel miniseries or whatever.
And they had the companion that came out.
They had the companion or whatever. But the main issue there was that it was Jeff Johns and who's the guy? Phil Jimenez's book.
Yeah.
Which is not mm-hmm. true because they had fill-in artists. But right. here, you have Doug Monke, who did Superman Beyond 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you have him doing... Final Crisis number 7.
Yes.
All of it.
Yes.
Therefore...
Well, not all of it, most of it.
He does 3 issues of the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
His name is going to get a billing on that hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Then why not throw in his issues of the story?
It certainly makes sense to me, but I guess not the DC editorial.
By the way, actually, I kind of enjoyed Monkey's art on Superman 3 a little bit more than J.
Well,
Jones.
Okay, and let me make this comment here. If you do make the trade... For the love of God, make it regular, no 3D. That shit was impossible, and I mean impossible to read. Because
it wasn't impossible, only because it went back and forth. I mean, if you...
Well, that's why, man.
It's
do one or the other.
It's very disjointed. I mean,
yes.
I mean, if you're going to do a... I don't know why they would do a collected edition without Superman 3D,
mm-hmm.
and then one with it.
Yeah.
Because J.G. Jones wants a bigger check. Or he wants a bigger piece of the pie. So mm-hmm. if you put Doug Monke's name in the trade, he gets more royalty rights
mm-hmm.
to that book.
Right.
I mean, obviously, the Final Crisis trade is going to sell more than the Superman Beyond trade,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know how they're going to make one. It's just 2 issues.
I'm sure they'll probably do some sort of prestige format
some
or something.
Crap in the back, whatever. You know what I mean? So it's all a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for J.G. Jones not to have the balls... To finish the story.
Well, it's like, okay, no, actually, now that I think about it.
It's DC's fault he didn't finish it because they didn't give him enough lead time. We knew about this about like a year ago,
mm-hmm.
right?
We
started seeing the Heroes Die, Legends Live On Forever, the teaser with the lightning thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't he have started then?
And better yet.
52 was done. He wasn't doing covers.
Yes. And what about the fact that we had all this buildup for Barry? You know, all this build up for the return of Barry. And Barry had like what, 4 scenes in all of Final Crisis?
I don't see the need for him.
I don't see him either. I think he was an afterthought. I really do. I mean,
it was like, oh, Ethan Van Sciver and Jeff Johns are doing Flash Rebirth.
We need a way to get Brett to bring him back, why don't we do it here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
in something that everybody's gonna read.
Right. Yeah.
I think this boils down to when they were plotting their big events this year, they had a whole laundry list of things that they wanted to do in their big event, and then they to Grant Morrison, okay, make sense of this, please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, find a way to do this in your book.
Okay, I mean, to me, this should not say Final Crisis.
Okay,
this is a Dark Side on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Side.
Yeah.
Dark Side wins. Evil wins. Whatever you want to call it. Not Final Crisis.
How about Final Crisis Dark Reign? You know, I think that'll work. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Here's my point. 6 issues up until now.
Mm-hmm.
Monitors shown up in issue 1. Nick's mm-hmm. Wotan sprinkled here and throughout. But mostly New God shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Not much anything else. Yeah.
Nothing else. Here, Mandrake shows up at the very end after Darkseid's been defeated how many times?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, he was shot in number 6, which is supposedly lethal, but he's still alive in number 7.
Yeah.
He gets run through with Omega rays from the Black Racer, the Flashes. That kills him. Superman sings a song. That kills him. How many fucking times does this guy have to die? And yet, at the end, he's not the big bad of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't it end there? God, why am I so fucking angry?
I know exactly why you're angry. I think
because
Brandon does too.
I feel misled because it was a dark side story up until this point.
And better yet, you're frustrated because this was called Final Crisis. Now, what's that supposed to be?
At the end, they throw in, you know, at the very end of this book, oh, this was the final crisis of the Monitors. Bull fucking shit.
No, to hell
this
with that.
This is Grant Morrison's skull fucking average minded fans.
Uh huh.
Like us, because maybe we're not the high concept guys. I feel like Grant Morrison came to my house, ripped my eyes out, and skull fucked me. Stuck his small Scottish dick into my eye sockets furiously.
And it's great that you just created your like moment of this episode, which will probably wind up in the next.
Let me finish. I'm on a rant.
You need a T-shirt. You seriously need a T-shirt. Grant Morrison skull fucked me and took out my eyes.
Yes. No, but seriously, I have been saving this rant since I read this.
All right.
I started thinking about what I was going to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, BK's bullets.
Thank you. All right. So this is Grant Morrison skull fucking the average reader. All right. You and I are not the dumbest of readers, correct?
They were.
No.
All right.
We are not the dumbest readers.
No, we're not.
We're all college educated.
Yeah.
We read books multiple times. Hell, we're even reviewing them on a show.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is him saying like a big fuck you to everybody who doesn't like Grant Morrison, who doesn't read into it super, super, super deep.
And remember JLA when he didn't used to do this shit?
Yes, that's the Grant Morrison I love.
Yeah.
All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that high concept, Harvard educated bullshit.
From Batman 655 to Batman 666, that was good, right? Grant Morrison.
Yeah. Yes.
From Batman 667 to was it Return of Ra's al Ghul to right before RAP. That was
traditional
Grant
storytelling.
Morrison, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think with RAP, he kind of started getting.
He went off his meds or something. I don't know.
I think that's when he started going back to. For the most part, Grant Morrison's really been an experimental storyteller. Look at things like We Three. That's fucked up right there.
Yeah, well, Sea Guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Invisibles, right.
Invisibles. I haven't read Invisibles, but I heard it's fucked up.
It's pretty
Therefore,
fucked up. Yeah.
I'm not going to read it because I don't like that
now,
stuff.
Here's a project, all right, for all you people out there listening to the show, okay? What I want you to do is...
motion comic of the panels chronological order.
Actually, I was going to say something that's very similar to that. I was going to say scan in all your pages and just take those Photoshop documents or whatever the hell you have, those JPEGs, and just move that shit around, okay? Put the pages, cut and paste, wherever the hell you need them to be so that you can understand what the hell you just read. It feels like, okay, you know what this feels like? When I read Universe X and my pages were misprinted.
Oh, Blue Beetle 26 for me had the script pages in the middle of the book. Things were out of order. That was difficult.
Wait, was it Spanish
issue? Reading it in Spanish. I'm flipping to the back to read the English captions because I forgot the Spanish I learned in high school. Thanks, Zach. And then I get to the thing, and then I'm missing some script pages.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, they're in the middle of the book.
Oh, man.
That was difficult.
Yeah, well, Universe X, actually, same thing happened also with... Greg Pak's Phoenix End Song or whatever it was. I read it.
War Song,
War Song. And my last like 6 pages were not there. They were misprinted. It was a reprint of what I had earlier on in the book, and I'm like, what the hell? That's what this shit felt like.
It feels like Grant Morrison of 2003 on X-Men. Really, it really does feel like that. Where, you know,
No. See, that I understood. No. That's a big no.
No.
That's a negatory right there.
I don't know. I mean, like,
that was good.
I guess no. Well, let's rephrase what you were saying. This, I'd say the closest comparison is the future arc that he did in New X-Men.
Okay. Because for me, back in 03 when I was reading X-Men, I was reading issues maybe here and there. And then, you know, to find out the big reveal, spoilers for those who don't know, Zorn was Magneto the whole entire time. It's like, I don't...
Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not getting from point A to point B.
Or is he?
We're going from point A to point B through, like, you know, a freaking wormhole and a half.
You get the point C, then point Q, and you're back to A.
Yeah, exactly. Then it all makes sense somehow in the long run.
Right.
And then your trip.
Please.
I would say that the Grant Morrison New X-Men arc arcs were pretty straightforward, linear, until you got to the future arc where it just jumped ahead and shit happened for no reason.
And yet I still understood
that. And we didn't get a full ending of his storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay.
Cyclops stepped on the butterfly, which, you know, stopped Jean Grey from ever coming back again.
I don't know. Okay, well, all right. Well, first off, let's all say, so what happened at the end of Final Crisis, all right? What happened at the end of Final Crisis? What ramifications do we have?
Yes, what ramifications are? Because obviously it doesn't matter enough that they need to hold solicitations for shit.
Let's go through what actually happened in this issue, okay? And, I mean, literally what happened, what ramifications happened at the end. Number one, okay, apparently Aquaman's back, or is he? Because I'm as confused as shit about this, because I just went to New York Comic Con, and people asked, where is Aquaman? And you'll find out in
Outpark,
in Blackest Night.
There he is, right there.
yes. But specifically, they were asked, what happened to the real Arthur Curry Aquaman?
What happened to Sword of Atlantis? I thought he was our Aquaman.
This was asked in... No, it's not. It's not. It's not. Different guy.
Did he die in the end of that series?
No. Well, Brandon, explain.
Sword of Atlantis takes place just before one year later. So let's see.
It was like a water elemental ours?
No. Sword of Atlantis actually takes place before that. Then it goes at Sword of Atlantis 1 year later.
Uh-huh.
That was an actual different Arthur. That's Arthur Joseph Curry, correct?
Yeah, Arthur Joseph Curry.
That's
yes.
not.
That guy started during 1 year later.
Right, because.
Yes.
Yeah, no, actually, the young guy did.
Okay,
he did. Boozy X started it. Yeah.
So that's our Arthur Joseph Curry.
Yes, but not Arthur Curry.
Right, and he was...
Arthur Curry was actually like a water elemental
He was the dweller in the deep.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And he was the one who was watching over that young
but,
Aquaman.
Okay, well, the point remains, our Aquaman shit happened, he wasn't around.
But we think, though, because the Aquaman, I don't think it's not Arthur Curry, I think it's going to be Arthur Joseph Curry. As him, because,
how about the fact that I'm going back to New York Comic Con here, where I asked what happened. Well, not I asked; other people asked what happened to our Arthur Curry. When are we going to see him next? And the response was, "You'll see him in Blackest Night."
I think you will, but only because if you notice, they've been writing Arthur Joseph Curry now.
Mm-hmm.
He's been acting a little bit like our old Aquaman, you know, becoming a complete dick.
That's because nobody knows who the hell Aquaman is right now.
The young guy was last seen in Superman, Batman, in that Kryptonite arc.
Yeah,
He was a complete dick then. He was acting like Aquaman. So I think he's getting to be the ruler of Atlantis that we know, but he's not the same one of them.
And let's not even talk about Brad Meltzer fucking shit up.
Grant Morrison
in JLA.
What the fuck was that?
I know.
Well, I think Grant Morrison was just like, let's meld the young guy with the future guy or the old guy, not tell anybody.
And let's.
It wouldn't surprise me. They've done it many times before.
Well, and let's go. It's talking about melds. Let's go with Hawkman and Hawkgirl in this. Hawk person, Hawk lady, Hawk.
What Hawks?
Blend.
They don't exist anymore.
Right, I know. Well, okay, but at the end of this issue, all right, after Hawkman's talking about maybe we should resurrect because then you'll love me again, and Hawkgirl's like creepy.
They're the ambiguously dead duo, aren't they?
I can now see their souls. What's everybody looking at? But at the end of the issue, you see. Their helms, you know, and the
just
mace.
One.
Just one. Hawkman's helm and mace, you know.
But why kill... my thing...
Beginning of the issue.
But my thing...
The end of the story, the beginning of the issue. Oh, my God!
My thing is...
You know, other people are actually staying here.
Yes, it's
not even 11.
All right.
My thing is, though, Oh, 7 minutes to 11. Fuck you.
It's not even 11. There's a room to the left of us, which is part of the suite, and we're at the end of the fucking hall.
All right. Fine.
But there are people above and below us, though.
Anyway...
But, I mean, like, why kill off, quote-unquote, Hawkman if he's such a central figure to JSA right now? Because if you read JSA, have you guys read JSA lately?
Yes, all the time.
He's in there. He's doing a fucking issue.
Well, because, again, Final Crisis has not happened yet.
That's what pisses me off about these event posts. They need to be working with and in coordination with...
All right.
They kicked him out so he could die.
Can I go on a mini rant here for a minute?
Okay, all right.
Marvel Comics, Secret Invasion. Why did it work for me? Number one, Marvel books concurrently were having
exactly.
their Secret Invasion
yes.
arcs during Secret Invasion. Dark Reign, what's happening right now? Dark Reign, everything's connected, everything's good to go. Infinite Crisis, why did that work for me? Because Infinite Crisis had their series that were connected with Infinite Crisis. You could still read books that were not associated with that, but that's fine because they didn't have anything to do with anything.
Cheers.
Thank you.
I can do you one. I can do you one better.
Yeah.
Even with Secret Invasion, they had miniseries also.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still self-contained.
Yep. Like Secret Invasion, Fantastic Four.
Exactly. If you don't want that in your Fantastic Four book, you can read the Fantastic Four book.
We're having Dark Reign Fantastic Four written by the future writer of Fantastic Four, Jonathan Hickman.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to get good stuff here with Final Crisis. What do you have? You have. Exactly.
You have a bunch of miniseries, which I do like. I like that they put this a lot of stuff in miniseries.
Yeah, but the miniseries, Legion of Three Worlds. What does that have to do with Final Crisis? Nothing.
Not done yet.
Yes.
Revelations was a better read than this. Did you read Revelations?
Yes. Resist was great. Submit was okay. Resist was great.
Resist
and
was
why?
Good.
Greg fucking Rucka.
No. Yeah, Greg fucking Rucka on Revelations.
Yes.
On Revelations.
Piece of shit. And Resist.
Resist
was great. It was the end. Dude, was Resist cool. was the end of Checkmate.
I jumped off Checkmate at 5. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I
came back for Check Outsiders Checkmate.
I read all of Greg Rucka's Checkmate, so that's why that was great for me, because it was the end of the title, basically.
I think there were a lot of ups. Final Crisis. I mean, we had Jeff Johns writing Legion. You know, we have a George Perez drawing Legion.
Mm-hmm.
We had Greg Rucka finally finish up his Checkmate.
Rogues Gallery, which had nothing to do with Final Crisis. Yippee-ki-yay.
But the thing is, oh, that pissed me off also. Libra, who's supposed to be this big, big bad, this big up-and-coming villain, has nothing to fucking do with anything.
Okay, let's go with the fact that in Final Crisis right here, all it took was basically Lex Luthor, flick, and that's it. Bye-bye, Libra.
Okay, look, Libra's been gone for 30 years, okay?
That was 6. I don't even know anymore.
It was 6, but like, the thing is, like, we've been jerked around so much from event... From event to event.
To event.
I mean, like, okay, I'm going to go back to a point that Brent started making before, when they call this the Final Crisis of the monitors. For 6 fucking months, they called Infinite Crisis the Middling Crisis.
Yeah.
We knew there was going to be another crisis.
Legion called it third, and this one was supposed to be third crisis, right?
Exactly.
Final crisis.
This was just the last crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Not the last crisis of the monitors, but the last crisis of the fucking man.
Well, maybe there's still a last crisis to come. Maybe this is Final Crisis, but the next one's last crisis. I don't fucking know.
If they do that, I am so fucking done with DC.
I know.
This is the problem with you when you label your events with this crisis moniker. Because the first one was really good and did a whole lot for the universe, and the second one was all right. We had Identity Crisis. Nobody knew what that was.
Uh-huh.
Turned out to be a good story.
Yeah.
So now you have this...
And remember, Identity Crisis isn't even technically part of this anymore.
What am I looking for? No, like...
Serendipity? I don't even know, man.
Reputation.
Reputation, thank you.
You have the reputation of world-changing events... Either universe or personal lives, or, you know, the multiverse came back in Infinite Crisis, right? And here, I agree, you have universe-changing events, evil wins, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
However, it doesn't have to do with... It does have to do with monitors and shit, so it goes back to the original. However, I feel it doesn't have anything to do with the crisis moniker as we think of it.
Definitely.
If you think about the crisis itself, you have Infinite Crisis, right? That happened in 85, right?
80... Was it 85 or 86?
85, 86. All right,
yeah.
No, original crisis. No, it happened from 85 to 86, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Identity Crisis.
It's not even really a crisis.
It's not really a crisis, but it starts off... They actually use it as their kickoff to the whole countdown to Infinite Crisis.
Right.
And that's when you had the breaking of the superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
You had the original Who Do You Trust, for the most part. You know, can you trust your enemies? Can you trust your friends?
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Infinite Crisis, which was, I believe, it wasn't as good as Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I believe it had... I believe Jeff Johns tried to be as true
Jeff
as...
Jeff Johns was in... his heart was in the right place.
He tried to be as true as he possibly could.
Right.
Now, my thing is, I think it's been too soon since we had our last crisis. You can't have a crisis every 5 years. I mean, a crisis... I mean, it takes away from the actual brand itself.
Well, that's why I don't think this shit's over. I think 10 years from now, we're going to get a crisis again.
And then 10 years from now, well, there'll be a major backlash from the reader, from us.
Look, what I'm basically saying right here, okay? Another thing that Marvel had right was the fact that they have their knowledge bases, where they've got guys like Mark Miller, Bendis, I guess you can even put Hickman in there now. Like, they've got their brain trust going on. And for a while, DC had that.
I mean, the thing is,
and now they don't anymore, thanks to Grant Morrison, because Grant Morrison was not part of that brain trust past 52, and now he's trying to make it his own.
But the thing is, that they need people like Mark Waid.
Yeah.
They really should put Mark Waid on
Thank
like
you.
This.
Yeah, they need, almost did.
They need someone like...
Well, okay, no. All right, they came pretty damn close to putting Mark Waid on Action Comics, which would have got him back into the DC fold, but it didn't happen.
But I don't mind having Morrison on a book.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, I liked Morrison's Batman.
Yeah, I don't mind him being on Batman, right.
And it's a fun read. But when you give Morrison too much power, yeah, too much leeway, an ability to do too much at one time,
mm-hmm.
I think he doesn't go megalomania for the most part.
Yeah.
I think he wants to change things for change's sake.
He wants to do too much at once, too.
Yeah. I think Morrison works better when has control over his own stories and his whole, that one book, that mm-hmm. one title. It's compartmentalized
yeah.
within his story. Whereas here, it's not just Darkseid miniseries, it's Final Crisis, yeah. it's the whole fucking DC universe.
When
and that's what the problem is.
Also, they never tied it into anything which happened in Count. Well, to some things in Countdown, but they never really tied it into Death of the New Gods.
Death of the New Gods, yeah.
They didn't even do that. They said they were doing some rewrites or whatever to count it, to tie into Countdown.
So
it didn't even happen. We didn't have Solomon. We didn't have Midge. We didn't have Bob.
Midge.
Right, whatever you call him. We didn't have anything about that.
Well, and how about
all that we had was Earth 51 is somehow...
Yeah.
Wronged.
Yeah.
And Nixie Wotan is the monitor, and he has the same hairstyle, and that's all we know.
Well,
that's all that's mentioned in this.
Are we to say that the rewrite that quote unquote happened in this? What if the rewrite was giving the fourth world their own Earth? Like what happened in this? Maybe that was not going to happen originally.
Like, why do I care though? Either this or Countdown to Final Crisis
mm-hmm.
can be tossed aside and ignored.
Yeah.
One or the other.
One or the other, not
both. Or
both. Yeah, yeah.
Or well, both.
And, well, damn it, I was going to say something and then it went away. Fuck, what the hell was I going to say? Shit. All right, go ahead.
But give me, I liked how this story began. It was this big epic with monitors. You had Nix Wotan on trial. You had mm-hmm. him. The thing is, if they would have followed at least one storyline to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And you followed Nix Wotan throughout the whole entire book.
But
I think it would have been
still try to do way too much at once.
It would have been a lot better.
Okay, what does it say when your own editors, okay, come out and do a parody of you at a con? And I mean, this was brought up at a bunch of different places. Where
this is at New York Comic Con?
Yeah, yeah. This is so unprofessional.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When Yeah, yeah,
after his grandmother died, and he's not there to defend himself.
The whole thing where they did this whole circular like chart starts off here, blah blah blah, blah, and like all over the place. I mean, sure, it was all fun and games and all that, but when your own editors are making fun of the fact that you cannot do a story in a straight line and that it's basically a circle,
or then while your book's coming out, you have Ambush Bug, you're none.
Uh-huh.
Which is making fun of you as you're writing the book as well.
Yes, yes. But okay, but that's different. That's Keith Giffen. He's allowed to.
I think that shows that DC never really had that much faith in Grant Morrison. If they're as the book is coming out, they're letting Grant...
No, they had too much...
No.
I don't think that they had no faith. I think they had too much. They thought that he was going to come out. I mean, the fact that they basically let him work the script and hoped that Countdown to Final Crisis was going to somehow connect to it
but
proves they had too much faith in Grant Morrison. Not enough, too much.
So you're saying that Keith Giffen was the only person who really knew what was going to actually possibly happen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Not even Grant Morrison knew. And he wrote the fucking book.
I love the way your hair shakes when you do that.
Thank you. Thank
all right,
you.
All right. One more thing about this book. You know, That's why there's a hole when Darkseid fell through the universe. When did that happen in Final Crisis?
What hole? What hole?
Oh, you mean the DC Universe Zero segment?
Wait, when that crazy guy is falling through? Are you fucking kidding me?
You didn't know? I knew.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Oh my!
I knew that's what they're talking about, but it's not in the series.
Wait.
He comes back as a black guy. No offense.
Wait. All right. My thing is though, this whole Darkseid Club thing also. That never tied into anything.
And now Terror Titans is still coming out, and it's dealing with the
Darkseid Club.
The Darkseid Club. Yeah. Yes.
But
thank
my thing
you.
Is though, like, okay, so you said. All right, so I remember it was Boss Darkseid in the Darkseid Club. That was that was the black guy who was in charge of the club.
Mm-hmm.
That was him falling through the heavens, coming down to Earth, and that was the guy who died at the end.
He fell through and then went into the black guy.
You're left speechless, I know.
None of us understand. You know, I don't know if you're right, but the thing is, I don't know if you're wrong either.
You know what's funny is we're doing the same thing with this book that we did about Punisher. We're arguing about the metaphysics of
the book, whatever.
I know it's a totally different thing. We're not talking about art and story. We're talking about the story.
We're talking about the story itself.
I'm just busting your balls.
But, well, okay.
Oh my God.
But what about the fact that the whole Omega Sanctum or whatever the fuck it is?
Yeah,
and by the way, I totally damaged my book, but I don't care.
you did throw it on the floor pretty hard when I busted that bubble in your head that DC Universe Zero was actually kind of relevant.
The whole Omega Sanctum. You would have had to have read
the Sanctum
Seven
Sanctorum.
Soldiers of Victory.
It's the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yeah, whatever the hell it
Sanction.
Is. Different
from the Omega Beams, which everybody knows what they do. Everybody knows what the Omega Beams do, right?
Yeah, but
they kill people.
But
he can control them. What is the Sanction? I've never heard of it before.
This whole thing was brought up in Seven Soldiers of Victory, apparently.
Which nobody read.
Mr. Miracle's series this happened in.
Which
and
nobody
that's why,
read.
Yeah, which nobody read. Thank you. You're on a roll.
Boom, boom.
try to veal. And thank you very much. But... yeah, and now they bring it up here, expecting us to know, oh, well, you must have read Seven Soldiers, so you have to know that Batman's not really dead. He's actually in the past.
But the thing, also, I mean, the whole thing with having only tie-in with R.I.P., really? Really now?
Let me go. Sean,
oh,
I'm sorry. Again. The Batman R.I.P.
Wait. Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, BK's Bullets. Okay, go ahead. I'm going to introduce you.
No. All right. Like I was saying on 84, the last episode, those Batman issues, raise your hand. Okay, not really raise your hand.
Yeah, raise your hand.
Speak up.
Because the listeners can see that we're raising our hand.
Give me a head nod or whatever. So if you thought that those... made sense.
Nodding head. No,
Brandon?
Really.
Here and there, yeah, they made sense. But I don't like how the fact that apparently this whole thing ties into fucking Final Crisis. It doesn't fucking make sense.
Okay, what I didn't like, though, what I was trying to tell Sean on the last episode was that I did not like the non-linear storytelling of those books.
Yes.
There were too many things happening at the same time. I got that there are visions or dreams. I understood that. However, give me a reveal at the end of the... book that he's in whatever and give me all that stuff. Don't intercut it by panels, not just pages. Like I said before, I would not have minded pages on pages, but when you cut it into panel, you see the mud thing and then on the next panel you're back into the dream vision smokehouse, like Raph saying whatever. Don't give me that because I can't follow it.
Just give us some hint or some, like a little flash of a panel here and there. You see something's not quite right. I get it with R.I.P. The whole thing was not quite right in Batman's mind. He knew that something was wrong the whole entire time. I get that. And I think, I know when Sean said on 84, like, how Batman knew that something wasn't right and how the Joker also knew that something wasn't right. I think we get that just by the whole atmosphere of the book. All of a sudden, you have this person who's introduced in the book, Jezebel Jett, as Batman, as Bruce's love interest.
Well,
she wasn't even in the book up until the beginning of R.I.P. She wasn't.
They had that cool James Bond snowmobiling parachuting scene in when Andy Kubert was still on the book. She was in the book from the beginning of his run,
pretty much.
So that was our So you can say that from 655, around there, was our beginning of the whole entire RIP arc.
That's what Grant Morrison said he was doing when he... I don't even know. We're talking about Batman. This is why we're talking about RIP. But that's... He said in the beginning of the run, he's going to tell a mega Batman story.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes on the book is the beginning of the story. Right now, we're at the interlude where Tony Daniels doing Battle for the Cowl, which is 30 pages. I forgot to bring this up at dinner. 30 pages each.
Okay.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Not bad, yeah.
Three issues.
Yeah. If he writes
writing
good, we don't know. We don't know.
Did I show you the colors on there?
I'm not sure if you
look
did.
Look up
no.
Tony Daniel blog online later
okay.
on.
It's, all right.
The colors are amazing.
Well, but, okay, and let me also go back just one quick moment here to the whole trusting Grant Morrison too much. What about the fact that Grant Morrison's book that he was writing at the time, Batman, was the only one that was allowed to tie in directly
yes.
to Final Crisis? Superman's doing his own shit with Planet Krypton and all that. Brandon, before you say anything else, okay, all right? The fact that Batman is the only one tying in now, while Final Crisis is going on, proves that they thought Grant Morrison knew everything. They didn't want anybody else to touch it.
It
this
just
was Grant
seems
Morrison's
selfish,
baby.
Though.
Yeah.
That nobody else can figure it out, therefore nobody else can tie into it.
Yeah.
Selfish, yeah, but it also shows an editorial breakdown. That's where you have someone like Ian Zettler, who's the coordinating editor of DC, right? What coordinating has he been doing since he got in the job? Not a whole hell of a lot of much.
Going to MegaCon last year?
Exactly. I mean, this whole debacle with Countdown. And
mm-hmm.
I gotta agree with John, Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
That was an abortion.
Yes, it was.
It was like...
There are dead fetuses.
This is
early stage or coat hanger, Brent just said.
This is coat hanger right here. This is coat hanger right here. This is like, you know... Nope, up. There. Snatch right
Brandon,
there.
Brandon, you just went too far.
I gotta go that far because this is how bad it was.
Right, that's it, Brandon. I think you've had too much.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, hold on.
No.
Let me think.
Hold on.
Let me think. I'm not drunk yet, guys.
All right. Come on.
But I mean, let me take it down a little bit. I mean, I think that exactly. I think that if you were allowed the actual events, the Final Crisis, to happen, if you were to allow the fallouts. Because we had some really, really cool moments in Final Crisis. But unfortunately, none of them really mattered in the countdown mm-hmm. to Final Crisis. In the countdown, none of them really mattered to the
yeah.
to the actual countdown of Final Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You had the part with Piper and Trickster. That was a really cool arc.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, for the most part, throughout the whole entire book, it was a little bit of every issue of Piper
yeah.
and Trickster. For what? To kill off Jesse James? To have Trickster go off and be hero again? And it is not tying the Final Crisis.
And where's Harley Quinn and other Catwoman
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You stop talking.
Please do not jerk off the wire. Okay.
then you have Ray Palmer, you have Kyle Rayner,
mm-hmm.
and Donna Troy,
yeah.
and Forager
mm-hmm.
as people who watch the monitors.
Yeah, which never happened.
Exactly. You saw Ray Palmer once mm-hmm. in Final Crisis.
Yeah,
and that was the Power of the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's. There are so many loose ends, and there are so many things which could have been tied up, I believe, in Final Crisis if they actually had an actual editor to make sure to say, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Not just letting... And I think it could have bled into other books also. It could have bled it back, you know, with Forager. It could have bled it with Forager, the Challenge of the Multiverse.
Yeah.
That could have bled into a Superman book, because for the most part, they are Superman supporting characters. You could have had Piper. You could have had Piper and Trickster bleed into the Flash. It would have made a lot more sense.
Well, and I mean, Piper did come back with Rogue's Revenge.
While we're talking about Countdown to Infinite, while we're talking about Countdown,
mm-hmm.
I think Monarch would have been a much better villain.
Yes.
In Final Crisis.
Yeah, where is he?
Because you know we got up into issue 26 or whatever into the 20s in Countdown.
Uh-huh.
We were having the war.
Yes.
We were having the Monitor
yes.
war.
Yes. Yes.
Unfortunately, it wasn't written that well, but the idea was great.
Was there? Yeah.
And where's Primat also?
Well, okay. Well, let's go with the fact that. Well, okay, we know where Prime is.
No. All right, but not even
yeah,
that,
but,
though.
But
we knew where Prime is as of issue 3, but for those first two issues, where the hell was Prime at the whole entire time?
Dude, we know...
Prime is in the future, yes.
Yeah, Prime is in the future.
As of issue 3, because that's, I believe...
No, Prime is... Dude, no.
Okay,
just
Countdown happened, then he went into Sinestro Corps, And in that the end of Sinestro Corps, he got thrown into the future, into three worlds.
Yeah, just because it happens in the future doesn't necessarily mean...
Or am I getting this backwards?
No.
Countdown,
Sinestro Corps, three worlds. We did not see him until three worlds. No. Wait, actually, no, you're right, actually. Sinestro Corps, then Countdown, then three worlds.
Aged in the Black Superman.
In Countdown? Yeah. Yes.
But
from Black...
I just know at some point he got thrown into the future.
Yes, and that's what happens. But, all right, what's... Okay, I've completely lost my train of thought because we're talking about Prime and trying to figure out his timeline. But
who cares?
With Monarch, the reason that Monarch is not around right now is because Countdown flopped.
I know, but...
That's what the Dio
here's
stated.
Here's my beef,
I know,
though. You gave us a comic book series on a weekly basis for a whole year.
Yeah, and it was bullshit.
And then you say when this comes, that comes out once a month and can't be the same artist and can't be on time, that you managed to get a book out for a year. And then you give it to us. It wasn't that good. We accept that. Mm-hmm. However, you just take it away and say it doesn't matter. Yeah. We read it for a year, guys. Mm-hmm. We read 52 issues in a year. And for them to say these 52 issues don't matter that much anymore.
And that's their own damn fault. It's their own damn fault.
It is their fault.
Because not only were they not collaborating with Morrison on this whole shit, but they weren't bothering to check with Morrison. So, yeah, you know what's going on, right?
It's everybody's fault.
Yeah.
Because...
It was a whole cluster.
They should have been checking with Morrison. You're right. Mm-hmm. However, Morrison, as the writer of the event, should go, oh, you guys are bothering to check with me. Maybe I should bother to check with you.
Yeah.
I blame editorial for this part. This is...
It's everybody's fault. It's not just editorial.
No, this really does fall on editorial a lot, though, because if you were... I could sound like a broken horse, but you need cohesion. Mm-hmm. That's why this is a universe.
Yeah.
That's the editor's job, is to have that cohesive universe. Mm-hmm. If the writers can't communicate, it's the editor's job because they work out of the same office.
Well, and let's go with the fact that...
If Grant Morrison wasn't able to make those initial Countdown discussions... Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the reason was.
Then that's editorial's fault.
Then editorial should have taken up and stood up and said, all right, well, since Grant wasn't able to be here to relay his ideas, then we have to do that for them and make it work.
And, okay, so we're getting ramifications in March for Final Crisis, apparently, right?
Where? In what book?
It's apparently going to be Final Crisis ramifications, like their own
all
shit.
All I know is they're
like
putting out
one shots
six
and shit.
Shitty miniseries.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that they're going to be shitty yet.
Okay,
dude.
All right. Uninteresting miniseries.
Okay. All right, but meanwhile, they say we're going to be getting ramifications. Well, what about the fact that the DC Universe has already moved on to Blackest Night? And Blackest Night is the next big event. So are you telling me we're going to get ramifications in a month and then move on to this whole prequel to Blackest Night shit going on?
I'm confused as to what the ramifications are because, to me, here, it's already happened.
Yeah.
Universe died. Mm-hmm. Superman brought it back to life with some god machine, which is obviously a storytelling guffaw.
Well, no.
It's a MacGuffin.
God machine was from an old Legion story. It was actually it's been around.
I know
it's a Deus Ex Machina, but
people pulling shit out of their ass from an old Legion story back in the 60s or whatever, because literally, who's read that? John and Bob. John and Bob and Peter Rios and maybe
Brandon,
right?
do you know the story we're talking about with the God Machine?
If you go into the comic shop and ask them, are they gonna know? Honestly,
no.
Maybe the guy behind the counter. So I'm sick and tired of this bullshit.
All right. Okay.
About pulling it out from some old Legion story and when you don't bother to reprint it or anything like that.
All right, we're getting dangerously close to 2 hours here on a review corner, and we just spent the last hour ripping on Final Crisis number 7. We haven't talked about the art or the story. We talked about the story. Let's talk about the art real quick.
Okay, I will say that I don't think we need to touch on the story because there are plenty of other podcasts who did that.
Well, okay, art-wise, agree or disagree, Doug Monkey should have been on the entire thing.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Agree.
Okay, all right.
Brandon agrees as well. However, I think that the art here took a serious hit.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because of so many inkers.
Yeah. Because... He's got this whole
definitely
bony face thing going on all the way through.
Right, and if you look at Superman Beyond number 2, that art had a lot of inkers, but it looked consistent throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Here, that did not happen.
Yes.
Definitely rushed also, especially in some of the panels where you have the faces that are side by side. You can see they're just wonky looking all around.
Yeah. And I mean, there were, what, 7 inkers on this book? I mean, that's pretty freaking bad, man. I mean, that is a rush job of rush jobs.
You know, they were saying that they had to get this book out by the end of January. Why?
I don't know.
Why? Was it so that they could discuss it at New York Comic Con? Is that
maybe.
Why?
Well, plus,
it doesn't
plus,
seem like a real reason to get it out, though. There's no publishing reason. There's nothing else that was coming out.
They thought
they had to put it out by that point. If they took a little bit of time and let the inkers do whatever, they could have done it.
And I guess they didn't want delays, but then again,
think
it wouldn't have delayed
the
books.
7 inkers on one book.
Yeah.
Inkers do how many pages a day normally? Maybe 2 or 3.
Maybe something like that.
Maybe
yeah.
more.
Yeah.
So 7 inkers, that means this whole book was probably inked in a span of
in a week.
A week and a half.
Yeah, a week and a half, yeah.
The thing also, I mean, this is 7 issues, which came out in, what, 8 months, right?
Nine?
9 months, yeah, 9 months, yeah.
There was a five-week...
A delay, and then an extra.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think, even after the one delay already, I don't think people would have been really miffed if this book came out another 2 weeks late.
I wouldn't care if this was still Jones and Pacheco.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, what I do know about this is that so many mistakes were made that I'm seriously hoping that DC will learn from their mistakes. I doubt they will because they seem to just repeat the same shit over and over again. But
Ivan Reis is doing Blackest Night.
Yes, Ivan Reis is doing
Blackest
Night.
He's done with the Free Comic Book Day issue.
Yes.
He's starting on Blackest Night.
Yeah.
When does it come out?
June
or July?
June or July, yeah. Yeah.
And
Ivan Reis does actually draw quickly. From what we know.
And he packs shit in.
Yeah.
That's what slows him down.
He's a fudge packer. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
And that's an actual miniseries, not just a tie-in between two books, correct?
Yes. Yes, that's an actual miniseries,
not
just
Lex
a tie-in.
And Astro.
There will be final... I mean, there will be Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps stories told about Blackest Night, but it'll be more like what Green Lantern Corps was for Sinestro Corps War. That sort of stuff.
And this is a Jeff Johns written event, so I think this will be all in... Yeah. Actual serious stuff.
Just like a Bendis event in Marvel, it will make sense. Okay, with the universe as a whole, it will make sense.
And there will be a definite conclusion. Correct?
Yes, because Jeff Johns knows how to write conclusions.
You know what though? I think what makes the difference between the two companies.
What
you hear about Marvel having these summits, the Spider-Man summit, the Avengers summit, where all the writers get together. Maybe they're not even involved in the book, but they're a big-time writer. They go to the summit.
Superman
and they
summit
help
happens.
Plan
yeah.
out the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is DC having this with their whole universe?
Not with the whole universe. Only with Superman. Right?
While we were in New York, they had the Superman summit there.
Yeah.
And that's when they come together. They say, "Okay, look, we're going to do this for this whole entire year." And they actually plan out the whole entire Superman line. They need to do that with the universe.
Line by line, they do not do that for the DC universe as a whole. That's what makes them different.
And that's why a book like 52 works. Because you have an actual coalition of writers who come together. And even though it may have been different than what they wanted, they came together and they had an expected beginning, expected middle, expected end.
Yep.
You can't just write stuff and hope it comes together along the lines.
Okay.
That's why Countdown didn't work, because there wasn't any communication. It was, here's your outline, write the issue. Here's your outline, write the issue.
Yeah.
And I think with Paul Dini writing an outline, Paul Dini, I think he's crafted the story, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he was really there to say, okay, make sure this happens in this issue here, but, you know, we want to have this here. And he'll go along and he'll approve, I think he either approved or denied the script. I think he approved most of them before they went out anyway.
Yeah.
And you need someone like a Keith Giffen on a book like that. And that's why I think with Keith Giffen doing the 2 yearly series, he was the one who really kept the pace of it.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure that you had that on a lot of books. I mean, even if it's just an event, yeah, you can have your top superstar writer write the event, but you need to make sure that there is an element of focus for the book itself also.
Yeah. All right, so here we are. End of this conversation, all this.
My
throat's killing me right now, too. So, all right. So, is it even possible to give this a rating out of 5?
I think so.
All right. So, Brent, what do you rate it?
A 1?
Wow. That's being generous. all right. So one out of 5.
A 1. It did have its redeeming qualities. I mean, it was entertaining. I did like the art.
And maybe...
It did have some interesting concepts once you read Superman Beyond #2.
Yeah, and it's nice to know that Batman is Captain Caveman. That's about what
we know.
You know
what? I hope Grant Morrison returns to Batman. but it's in the Batman book.
Yeah, with Quietly.
I want him to tell that story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's returning with Quietly. Yeah, it's gonna
that's
be
a rumor.
No, it's not a rumor. It's confirmed.
You sure?
I'm very much positive.
All right, well, we've been waiting forever. However, I want him to tell Caveman Batman story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want him to tell. I'm gonna find out how.
Ugh.
you're so funny. Not.
Yeah. All right.
I want to find out how Bruce Wayne gets back, and I want Grant Morrison to tell that story because obviously he's the only one that can do it.
Apparently,
I'm gonna abstain for a little bit. I think I really need to see this, how this whole thing plays out. Then I'm gonna wait until Final Crisis.
Don't pussy out.
At
tell
the
us.
End, though.
Yeah.
This is the end.
This is the end.
This is
dude.
The end of the line. This is the world's edge at Pirates of the Caribbean, where you don't. The world is flat. There's nothing beyond this.
This is not, no, the end isn't until the end of Legion of Three Worlds. I think that's what we're going
to do. Three Worlds leads right back into number six, though. It doesn't have anything to do with it. The Time Trapper.
Brandon, give it a fucking
the
rating.
The Time Trapper. You
give it a rating.
The Time Trapper has anything to do with anything cool?
Yes.
Rating.
I'll say a 1.5.
1.5? All right. I'm giving it about a 1.5, too. I cannot bring myself to give it a 2. I want to, at least, to give it at least a little bit of a redeeming factor. It's just not going to happen.
You said I was being generous, and you can give it a half a point more than I do.
I know. I don't know. It might just actually be Superman Beyond that redeems it for me a little bit. Barely. So that's where I'm going.
I'm confused as the infinite book with one page.
Yeah, I know.
Seven as a whole by itself, it's going to be a 1.5. I mean, as an event though, I'd have to give it a maybe 2.5, 3 around there because
it's not even getting that from me, man.
No, I will agree with Brandon because up until seven, it had been pretty easy to follow. I mean, we had been confused and so many jump cuts and stuff. I mean, that's a whole other separate conversation. We could do a whole series of podcasts on 1 to 6,
right?
But you have to agree that if this had not been crap, you would not be as angry about this.
It's true, yeah.
Because 1 through 6 were enjoyable on some level.
Yeah.
I mean, shit starts slow, then it picked up again, then 7 was just the wall it hit.
Yeah.
If this had been longer, I think it would have probably been a better series.
All right. Well, I guess that's where we are. So, all right, everybody listen to episode 86, which will be our first part of the MegaCon wrap-up and everything. I'd like to thank Vince B for the Yingling that we drank tonight. You can find him at bullpenbulletinspodcast.com. He had nothing to do with it, but he likes Yingling.
and listen to 84, because obviously we just talked about it a lot.
Yes.
The previous episode 84.
Yes, episode 84, definitely. So that's pretty much where we are. I'm not going to do any, you know, where can you find these guys? You can find them right here. We'll probably wind up doing multiple parts of 86. I don't think we're going to, you know, actually do 87, 88 for all that shit. Just do whatever comes out. So, yeah, we're done. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on iTunes. Please review us on iTunes. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. And don't take us because it no longer exists. So, voicemail. Sure, if you want to leave us a voicemail, my Skype name is Scary Monkey Show. So sent it to that. And I swear to God, that's me. It's not anybody else. And
see you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow. And as always, there's always time for comics, bitch. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's episode 85 here on the... Okay.
No.
Yeah,
no. I know. Why are you wearing pants?
Because they look cool. Yeah, honestly, they don't even do anything with the Vista. So...
You can audition through yourself.
No, you can hear yourself through audition. Yeah, sure you can. Yeah, if you have, you know, the right computer that actually works with such things, yeah. All right. Now, remember, try not to make any errors. This is going to go out almost as is. All right? Yes, we're doing a very professional show, so get all your Matthew Guy talk out now. All right?
You say, all right, the end, and then we can go into...
That's true. All right. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah,
being nice.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.